Blog Talk Radio.
Hello. Happy Sunday. This is Seeds of Change, and I'm your host, Danielle St. John. Wow. We had so much stuff go on this week. I had to write it down because, between aliens and Hunter Biden and Sinead O'Connor, and that was just Wednesday, that there's plenty to talk about. Facebook files, and really, oh, there's Elizabeth. Hello. Hold on. Oh. There we go. Hello.
Where's my good day, darling? Where's all my mascots? I'm good, but I'm in the green room and we have nothing. We have no shampoo, no nashis, no foot rubs.
Oh, I'll have to work on that.
My contract stipulates I must be.
I am technically the station manager now for Freedomizers, so I think you're talking to the right person. We might be able to accommodate.
I'm teasing. I thought it'd be just as demanding as everybody else's for one second. But how are you, love? Happy Sunday.
I'm doing great. One thing is that we have a wonderful maintenance person in my house doing a couple things.
Way cool.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just stuff that needs maintenance that needs to be, like, all of our lights in our bathroom are are out, and they're not you can go to the
I thought Joe was doing stuff. You've got a worker. So are you
a maintenance guy? Yeah.
Maintenance guy. So are we on the deck? Oh, are we in the patio? Or are we in and out of drills and such things?
Well, okay. So he has to change the whole light fixture because it's outdated. And so we can't even go to the grocery store and pick up some bulbs from Home Depot, and then the front of our stove is weird, but if it's okay with you, I would like to start with a video so that it's not loud while he's doing
absolutely.
This. On the Facebook files, right? We saw the Twitter files on censorship, and now we've got Facebook, the Facebook files, which basically just confirms everything that we already know, why we were shadow banned. But Jimmy Dore does a good segment on it with friend of the show, Craig Pasta, and Kurt Metzger. But so if it's okay with you, while there's a little bit of background noise, I'll start with that. Do you have anything to say about the Twitter file?
No, that's not my forte is the Twitter files. The censorship, the calling out of it, diving into the propaganda, why and how we need to be aware of how much there is, that's more my bag. So I'm learning from you as we go. So I'm interested in listening to
what we've got
going today. Okay. And who's
very good.
Calling me?
Okay, so we'll start with that. Here we go. Jimmy Dore on Facebook censorship. 3, 2, 1.
So just remember that earlier this month that the Biden administration was systematically, a federal court this month found that the Biden administration was systematically and unconstitutionally pressuring big tech to censor dissent. And what did Joe Biden do then? He sued to keep doing it. Mm-hmm. Representative Jim Jordan, now that the Republicans are in charge of the House, they get to have hearings, he found out about the same thing that the government was doing with the Twitter files, telling a social media company to censor and who to censor. They're doing it to Facebook, too. Of course, they're doing it here at YouTube. Of course, there's a target on our back. Of course, when I put out the Robert Malone video, they got an order from somewhere, from the White House, from Big Pharma, from whoever, to come after me. They did.
You could have much less subscribers than they would. That's the thing that's shocking. That's another thing. Twitter files. People with not a lot of followers or subscribers, they'll focus on especially.
So we're going to find out how Facebook also targeted me and our content. and you're going to see it in here. Not me specifically in here, but we were targeted the exact way. And so we would put up truthful content about the vaccine and or about COVID, and then it was caught, and it would get flagged as partly untrue, or we get flagged as missing context. And so that would mean that nobody's allowed to share it, and nobody gets to see it. And then they would suppress your account. So they suppressed our Facebook account. Now we're not even allowed to advertise our dates. I'm not even, so like if I'm doing the Toronto, a theater in Toronto, I forget what it's called, the Royal Theater. Now, if they want to, there's a way you can hook up the Royal Theater with the Jimmy Dore page. So when they post something about the Jimmy Dore show coming to their theater, it'll show up on my page too. They won't allow you to do that. They won't allow me to advertise my own shows on Facebook. Why? Because we were right about COVID, and the government and Big Pharma didn't want accurate information about COVID getting out there. So they made it look like I was spreading misinformation. So now probably people who casually know me or people who know me all my life think I was spreading misinformation because Facebook was lying that we were spreading misinformation. We proved every time they did a fact check, it was a fake fact check. It was made up stuff, and it was funded by Bill Gates. Facebook says they use third-party fact checkers. They use third-party fact checkers funded by Bill Gates and the Rockefeller Foundation. That's who does that, okay?
Trusted sources.
Trusted sources. So this guy, they got some emails and docs. He says, never before released internal documents subpoenaed by the Judiciary Committee prove that Facebook and Instagram censored posts and changed their content moderation policies because of unconstitutional pressure from the Biden White House. During the first half of 2021, social media companies like Facebook faced tremendous pressure from the Biden White House, both publicly and privately, to crack down on alleged misinformation. Here's one of the emails. In April 2021, Facebook employees circulated an email for Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg and the COO Sheryl Sandberg, writing, "We are facing continued pressure from external stakeholders, including the Biden White House, to remove posts." What it says right there. "We are facing continued pressure from external stakeholders, including the White House and the press, to remove more COVID-19 vaccine discouraging content, not false, not inaccurate, but just something, anything that would discourage." So people got mad at me when I said I got vaccine injured. People I know got mad that I would share that information publicly that I got vaccine injured because it would discourage other people from getting the vaccine. So you're not supposed to tell the truth. And that's what this is telling too. So even truthful posts about the vaccine were censored.
Wait, look at White House was concerned that the number three post was a vaccine discouraging humorous meme.
Yes.
And they call, wow. Wow.
Yes,
wow,
meme. They even censored memes. We're going to show you that. So Jim Jordan then wrote that on April 2021, the email revealed that a Facebook executive informed his team that a Biden administration senior advisor was outraged that Facebook did not remove a particular post. The post, according to Jordan, was a meme of actor Leonardo DiCaprio pointing to a TV with the I'll show it to you. That's it. "Did you or a loved one take the COVID vaccine? You may be entitled, ... 10 years from now, you will be watching TV and hear this commercial.
You may be entitled to jack shit," is what it's going to say.
Yeah, right. But so the White House told Facebook to take this down. A meme that says... So back
well,
here...
No wonder comedy had to be censored so early on in the censorship wars. That's one of the first things.
So in another April 2021 email, Nick Clegg, Facebook's president for global affairs, informed his team at Facebook that Andy Slavitt, a senior advisor to the President Biden, was outraged that Facebook did not remove a particular post. Andy Slavitt was Joe Biden's chief in charge of COVID response. Andy Slavitt, in June of 2021, tweeted out that COVID is so contagious that everybody's going to get it, even if you're vaccinated.
Did he want that removed?
That's what he said. He said that in June of 2021. I saw that tweet. Nobody else in the entire world saw it. And so they thought if we just everybody got vaccinated, we would get rid of COVID. That was never the case. That was always a lie that was told to you by Fauci and the corporate media, that if everybody got vaccinated, we would get rid of the COVID virus. That was a lie in 2021. It's a lie in 2023. It was always a lie. And people were lied to, and they believed it. They believed it. People, luckily, my friends, my good friends, who don't know anything about COVID because they didn't look into it, all they did was turn on the TV, and they were lied to, and then they thought the lie was the truth, and they thought we were lying. No, you were being lied to by the government. You were being lied to by the corporate press that is owned by Big Pharma, and you're being lied to by Big Pharma.
Well, I just thank God that it turned out to be such a great, safe, and effective vaccine, because that could have been a real disaster.
It could have been. Just got off an hour-long call with Andy Slavitt, Joe Biden's COVID response director. There are some pretty serious and sensitive issues we need to address, and here's a summary. And he gives us all this. And an example, he was outraged. This is at the bottom. Not too strong a word to describe his reaction that we did not remove this post, which was third most highly ranked post in the data set that we sent to him.
Oh, well, I'm sure that'll get rid of the controversy.
And this was it. This was that third most. So Andy Slavitt, direct from the White House, is outraged. And so you don't think that's unconstitutional. You're not supposed to be able to do that. That's pressuring a social media company to censor. Let me go a little bit further. Facebook noted that removing content like that would represent a significant incursion into traditional boundaries of free expression in the United States. But Andy Slavitt, the Biden senior advisor who was worked up over the meme, disregarded the warning and the First Amendment. What happened next? Facebook panicked. In another April 2020 email, Brian Rice, Facebook's vice president of public policy, raised the concern that Slavitt's challenge felt very much like a crossroads for us with the Biden White House in these early days. Jordan noted that Facebook wanted to repair its relationship with the White House to avoid adverse action and provided a document in which someone who appears to be a Facebook staffer wrote, given what is at stake here, it would also be a good idea if we could regroup and take stock of where we are in our relations with the White House and our internal methods too. Jordan then wrote that it wasn't just the White House, because Facebook also changed its policies in direct response to pressure from Biden's Surgeon General, censoring members of the disinformation dozen.
Yeah.
Even though there were 18 of them, they called it disinformation dozen for alliteration, because this is propaganda.
Yeah. RFK is one of those information dirty dozens too, as well, I mentioned.
Exactly. And so here is, but it wasn't just the White House. Facebook also changed its policies in direct response to pressure for, there it is. And so here, I'll read you some of this. During that last discussion, we agreed to further explore four discrete policy options for reducing the prevalence of COVID-19 misinformation on our platforms. And number one, we're going to designate any assets linked to a groups or pages or profiles or accounts which have been removed for COVID misinformation as non-recommendable to users. So anybody who's even linked to these pages are so then it goes the impact. Number two, option two, count COVID misinformation and harm, vaccine widely debunked hoaxes, and COVID repeatedly fact-checked as hoaxes toward misinformation repeat offender status. So this is, that's one, that's two, here's three. Demote COVID or vaccine misinformation rated partly false more strongly. So we currently demote content rated partly false at 50%. We will increase that demotion level to 80% for COVID and vaccine misinformation. So if they declare that something that you said in your article or something you posted is not accurate, they will then, they would before suppress it only 50%. Now they're suppressing it 80%, right? Because it's COVID. We are targeting the end of next week for this launch. Number four, count COVID or vaccine-related URLs that are rated partly false or missing context. That's what they said about me. So when I said that the vaccine didn't stop the spread of the COVID, it didn't stop it because it doesn't.
It doesn't stop a cold. I remember
it stopped a cold.
Cold.
That's what they all said. Fauci said it stopped it cold. Well, it doesn't. That's a lie. The vaccine never stopped the COVID virus cold. That was always a lie, and I reported that. And then Facebook would say missing context.
So they then added the context.
And so they never added the context. But the context that Google and YouTube wants me to add to that is that the vaccine slows the spread and contraction.
Oh, that way you don't clog up the hospitals because the
hospital beds, Jimmy.
Hospital beds.
You want the hospital to buy more beds, Jimmy.
The dumbest argument in the history of mandated medicines is that you have to take a mandated, no long-term studies to take this medicine, not one long-term study. It usually takes 10 years to approve a vaccine. They did it in a couple of months. And you're going to mandate this because of, there's not enough hospital beds, because capitalists don't, because they're not profitable. Well, what the government should have done was built a bunch of hospital beds.
Maybe dip into the Ukraine money.
Maybe that $100 billion, $200 billion we sent to Ukraine. How many hospital beds do you think $200 billion could buy?
I bet a lot of them. Whether we need it or not.
I bet a lot of them, right? Yeah. And so that was the dumbest argument in the history of forced medical treatments, that you have to take a forced, untested medical treatment because capitalists don't have enough hospital beds? The answer to that is more hospital beds, not forcing people to take a treatment, an experimental medical treatment with no long-term studies. That's evil.
I never forget looking that up about why there's not enough hospital beds. And I found an article bragging.
We did look it up. We know exactly why there aren't enough hospital beds, Kurt. And the reason why is because they're not profitable.
Right.
So emergency care, ICU beds, they're not profitable to the hedge funds and the people who run our hospitals now.
Well, they said, is this the one we went on the show? I can't remember. They go, the whole article is about how great this is. And they go, well, that way they can focus on preventative care.
So that's why there weren't. So that's why. And by the way, in 2018, 2019, there weren't enough hospital beds then either. They were setting up triage beds and temporary treatments, tents in hospital parking lots from coast to coast in 2018 and 2019 flu season because we don't have enough hospital beds. They've reduced the hospital beds since 1975 in America by like a freaking couple million.
And that's why we have the best healthcare in the world.
And so the answer is that you more hospital beds. Maybe that's the answer. Not to force people to take a stupid big pharma garbage thing. So that's what they would do. So they did that to us. They said that we were missing context, even though we weren't missing context. These documents and others that were just produced to the committee prove that the Biden administration abused its powers to coerce Facebook into censoring Americans, preventing free and open discourse on issues of critical public importance. And when are the comedians going to get pissed off about this? I go into comedy clubs now, and every time I go into a comedy club, the comedians that used to be shaming people for trying to get informed about COVID and the vaccine are now talking about dating. They're talking about dating. World War III is about to happen. The biggest censorious campaign by the government ever in the history of our country just happened. They're not talking about any of it. We were lied to about mass herd immunity, natural immunity, prevention, contraction, the severity of COVID. It affects mostly elderly people, much like the flu is what Bill Gates said after he cashed in his stock for $500 million. They were lied about everything. If you said that the virus came from a lab, they called you a racist.
That's my favorite one.
They called you a racist.
It was not. Yeah.
They lied about everything. So here's my last slide, and then I'll bring in Craig. Only after the committee announced its intention to hold Mark Zuckerberg in contempt did Facebook produce any internal documents to the committee, including these documents, which prove that the government pressure was directly responsible for censorship on Facebook. Based on Facebook's newfound commitment to fully cooperate with the committee's investigation, the committee has decided to hold contempt in abeyance. So for now, to be clear, contempt is still on the table and will be used if Facebook fails to cooperate in full. So they were going to throw Mark Zuckerberg in jail for this. And so then Mark Zuckerberg then revealed all the criminality between the Biden White House and Facebook, because that's what that is. That's criminality. So Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg and the Biden administration are criminals, not the people who are posting things about the vaccine on Facebook. Turns out Mark Zuckerberg's the misinformer, Mark Zuckerberg's the liar, and Mark Zuckerberg almost had to go to jail because he wanted to cover up a conspiracy.
Yeah.
That's what he's doing. Let me bring in Craig Pasta. Craig, what would you like to say?
Well, I was just going to comment the fact is that they were only going to release this information after they threatened to subpoena Mark Zuckerberg, and I'm glad you just kind of brought that up because it's kind of crazy. But, you know, when I see this stuff, it's, you know, the first response is always duh, right? Like, we're in this business. We know this has been going on for quite some time. You know, I have up close to 50 videos on COVID, but none of them are on YouTube. None of them are on Facebook. Why? Because I was part of that whole kind of crew that got, you know, cut off, immediately censored, demonetized, threatened to have my channel taken away. Anytime I put up any information, whether I was pointing out the fact that they were lying and they were manipulating data the way they were kind of lumping in the unvaccinated with the partially vaccinated. If you were paying attention, you saw the CDC with the various data was putting up that they were putting the unvaccinated together with the partially vaccinated. Therefore, they can control this whole narrative. But if you mentioned one word or iota about that on YouTube or on Facebook, you got 86th. But the question I keep asking myself is the government and big tech one and the same, or are they, you know, two different entities? Because no matter what, you know, Dr. Shiva had proven when Twitter was doing the same thing, they had a direct portal. This is state officials that if you said anything that they didn't like when it came to disinformation, misinformation, if you put up a meme like this one right here where you're just igniting a spark for people to dive into stuff, they can make a phone call and take you down. So I keep asking the same question to this day. Are they one and the same or are they two different entities? Because it seems to me the one thing they are trying to do right here is separate themselves from the government. When in fact, when you talk to a lot of people, they say, Facebook and Twitter, they are the government. So many ex-officials work for these companies that it's hard to distinguish between the two.
So we know for sure that Twitter, at the very tip top, was riddled with FBI agents, right? And so the bottom line is, just like with Russiagate, just like with the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, the reason why Russiagate was allowed to happen, the reason why COVID censoring is allowed to happen, is because both parties work for the same people, the donor class. And the donor class is Mark Zuckerberg, is Twitter. The donor class is Silicon Valley. The donor class is Wall Street and the military-industrial complex. So they all work. So Mark Zuckerberg gets all his advertising from them. They're all in the same. This is what we've been talking about forever at the show. It's a uniparty. Yeah. And so, yes, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and the government – are the same thing because they all have the same interests and they all work for the same people.
Yeah.
Didn't we?
Can I also point out that I think that that's very important. Sorry for stepping on you there, Kurt. I'll go just really quickly. I think it is important to point out that they are one and the same way we should be pointing out the establishment is the same, whether it's on the right or the left, the Republicans or the Democrats. You know what I'm saying? This is a systematic problem. I know Jim Jordan's out there saying the Democrats, the Democrats, the Democrats. You know, Sam Bankman-Fried just got, acquitted. And everybody's saying the Democrats, the Democrats, the Democrats. Well, the Republicans took money, too, as well. Donald Trump's White House also had a line of contact to Twitter Facebook, whatnot, to say what they want. So this is a systematic problem. And when they come out with these things, the things that's really, really also, like, that we shine a light on is the fact that they keep exposing themselves. In the first Twitter – the Facebook files that Jim Jordan just put out, it also talked about – Tucker with a video that they demoted. Now, demoted is the code word for shadow banning.
Yes.
So they just keep exposing themselves more and more as this stuff comes out. But this is like information we should already, know. I approach these things, Jimmy, sometimes. I'm so disheartened because it's like, yeah, they keep doing this stuff, but what are we going to do about it? Is it ever going to change?
So this is the big – Go ahead, Kurt.
Remember
what?
We did the story about the guy? I can't remember what the title is. The guy at Facebook who's basically deciding family standards or some nonsense. He's a CIA guy.
Oh, yeah, the ex-CIA guy.
And they keep cutting him with his wedding ring.
Wedding ring. Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what his title is, but...
I'm sure it's like chief disinformation officer or something at Facebook. And he came directly from the CIA.
Public-private partnership.
And oh, now I forgot my point.
Oh, sorry.
You're having a Mitch McConnell moment.
Sorry, I sandbagged you.
Mm, you sandbagged me.
Way to go, Kurt.
Mm. I don't remember what I was going to say. Motherfucker. All right, well. All right, so there it is. Now you and when are people going to get upset? Kurt, do you see anybody doing jokes about it, that the government was censoring people for questioning Big Pharma? Like, that would be, you would think every comedian in the world would have a bit about it by this time.
Why? Most of them are on Big Pharma pills.
And they're just talking about dating.
When
they
don't talk about it at all. Okay, well, they're not going
to
have jokes. When I talk to my friends that I haven't seen, like, in New York, most of them are on new pharma drugs that they're, like, the mental ones,
mm-hmm.
or Ozempic is a big one.
Right.
Especially in New York. And that's like a classic medicated town. I mean, so is L.A., obviously, but
I remember what I wanted to say now. So that's the way the government helps censor, right? That's the way the government censors with Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. But also in there is the press help censor. How does the press censor? Well, you get like an asshole like from Huffington Post or the Daily Beast or the Wall or New York Times. And they call Facebook and they say, I can't believe we're doing a story
mm-hmm.
on these posts that you're leaving up that are toxic and you're going to have blood on your hands and you're killing people. Remember Joe Biden says that the social media was killing people?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I remember when he said that. And so what the press will do, these scumbags in the press, was they'll call social media and they'll say, we're doing a story on you leaving these posts up. So they immediately take those posts down. And that's what, so the biggest push for censorship, ironically, is coming from the press, comes from the people who consider themselves journalists are the ones who want censorship the most, because then they're out of a job, because people like me can report stuff that they're not allowed to report because they're sponsored by Big Pharma. And so they want us censored because we're competition.
Well, most of these journalists, too, and most of them, I assume the majority, are not even in on what they're doing. They're that big of losers.
You're correct.
And group, like, just
so
cows.
If you have a job at NBC, if you have a job at Fox News, if you have a job at CNN or New York Times or The Washington Post, it's because you were groomed to have that job since you were in kindergarten. You never colored outside the lines,
right.
And you crossed the T's and dotted the I's, and you never got in trouble. Those are the kind of people who are sitting in editorial meetings at news corporations and news companies, the people who have been groomed to follow the fucking rules since the day they were born, and they did, because if you color outside the lines, you don't get invited to NBC's editorial meeting.
Sub-Mormon.
That's why.
And they're using the same rhetoric, right? Like the same, what are you, crazy? Whether it be Anderson Cooper with Cornel West, like, what are you, Putin? Oh, come on. Or, you know, Sean Hannity did it with RFK. And even Piers Morgan did it with Jackson Hinkle, right? It's like, what are you, nuts? Are you kidding me? Putin's a killer. He's nuts. He's crazy. You're an idiot. You are crazy for speaking up for the Russian Federation defending its own borders. You're nuts. He's the murderer.
Well,
same rhetoric, same playbook.
I'll never forgive Putin myself for lying about weapons of mass destruction and invading a sovereign nation.
Yeah.
But he did end COVID. So come on.
Come see our live shows. We're going to be in Chicago, Rosemont, Las Vegas, Salt Lake City, New York City, Pottstown, Pennsylvania, Stamford, Toronto, Toledo, Detroit, St. Louis, and more. Go to jimmydore.com for a link for those tickets.
Okay. Well, that's a lot of information that we already knew. And Mom is with us. What's that?
I didn't know anybody was here. So welcome.
Here I am. Yeah, I logged in a little bit late. I'm doing a bunch of business. I have news. I got a new job, a part-time job, to go with my other one, which is a huge blessing. It's potential to turn into something really grand. It is also remote, so I'm doing it from my computer. And I'm excited because they appear to understand the value of counselors, this new company that I'm going to be working for. So I'm excited.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and this is drug and alcohol counseling.
It is, yes, drug and alcohol counseling with a, in particular, a mental health severe mental health issues that also very likely have problems with substance use disorder. Yes, I'm super excited.
All over the place, this remote medical field is really fascinating. It never was that way, and it's become so nice that you just can pick up the phone and talk to somebody virtual, a virtual doctor's appointment. You're like a suicide hotline kind of, you know, thing where you're a minute away, a second away from someone's bad decision. Help me. Very, very. I'm liking it. It's nice. It helps a whole swath of people to be able to work from the homes. People that couldn't get out and do these things that probably would be great at it. I'm seeing a lot of it. It's fantastic.
I think it's wonderful. And, you know, I will tell you that they resisted this at this remote medical stuff, you know, behavioral health, mental health, physical health, because of their inability to protect people's information. Well, based on what we just heard with our Facebook overlords and, you know, we know what they were doing on Twitter. We know they were doing it on Instagram. So their concerns are valid, obviously.
Yeah, but all that went out the window with COVID, right? Because we know that HIPAA is there not actually for privacy. One of the, you know, the P's in HIPAA are, you know, have nothing to do with privacy. It's, you know, health information, portability, and health information, portability, and accessibility act, right? So it's not
right.
Has nothing to do with it. It was actually like an afterthought to say, well, if it's going to be portable, how do we keep our health information private? And then that's what it turned into. And everybody thinks it's two P's and it's only one. But Zach is with us too. I'm going to let him in.
Awesome.
Hey there.
Hello.
Hey Zach. How are you today?
Good. I was just outside playing in the garden.
Oh, we love that. Have you been looking at Danielle's Facebook account? She's been doing reels from our garden this year. It's spectacular. We're having such a freaking blast with it. It's been amazing.
Well, that's the real thing. I try not to compare myself to, you know. I have one okra plant, and something came in and housed it, and now it's regrown a leaf. So that's kind of where we're at.
Oh, that's
we're
great.
One leaf here.
Okay. That's great. You're on the right track. Good.
It's a start. It's demoralizing.
I have to say the best gardeners have killed more plants than they've ever successfully grown. So good job.
Well, I would love to, shall we say, divert certain animal that keeps coming in here. So I don't think
Lord,
I'm going to win.
Critters.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're a raccoon, man. I don't think you can beat the raccoon. Explosives are illegal where I live, by the way. So.
Give them some dog kibble, and they'd rather eat the dog kibble than your vegetables.
Well,
that's very true.
Oh, yeah, but
These animals seem to have a bohemian flavor, kind of a hedonistic streak in them, where
they
take
do.
It all.
Yeah. So
well, right.
Danielle
yeah.
keeps talking about. Hold on, wait a second. Danielle keeps talking about this companion gardening, and now Elizabeth's talking about putting out some kibble. They'll eat that and everything else. So I call baloney on that.
I'll tell you what.
I don't know. Have you ever put out dog kibble? Maybe they don't. Maybe they will eat it.
They
will eat till they're full. I've had mornings I go out and there's half a bowl of dog food left. So it's like, oh my goodness, they ate till they're. I'm like, I'm taking very good care of them, so they're not. They're there's a limit.
They're gonna get diabetes soon, is what you're saying.
How's your mint doing?
They're
Zach,
eating.
Did you success with the mint?
The mint I moved indoors, same with parsley. So they're in protective, you know, protective services.
Protective custody. Good. I like it.
Got it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I mean, I might try the kibble outside, you know, with a little like atomic X-lax or something like that. But I have deer and predator spray. I even put the bucket at the gate and they walk by it. So what does that tell you? That's just like, you know, that's insulting. Man. That's just like up yours. I know this is a real. I have an owl that puts out a screech, you know, an infrared sensor, and they go bananas. The owl, I've come out there and the owl's knocked down. So they take a swipe at it.
So the critters is a constant battle, and we're always going to have that problem. I suppose you can surrender if you have a whole bunch of food out there. Elizabeth's probably correct. They can't eat all of it, but it's just sad because you want to eat the food. You plant the food. I used to tease Danielle. She would plant the stuff out in the front yard. I'm like, oh, look at you feeding the bunnies. That is so sweet.
And that's
of
so
you
true.
To do. Yeah. So well, I built Fort Knox outside of my kitchen window. It's got hardware cloth and, thick wooden beams and fence posts. And you know, they're still getting in, the littlest critters, the voles and the mice, but it's better this year.
Have you heard of – okay, so immediately came some visuals of old time. This is what people will do with their gardens in the country because they'll always have chicken wire, you know, around
yep.
it. But inside the chicken wire, they will also have little poles that have the aluminum pans from the Baker Square. So like an aluminum pan, you know, the it's not like metal, but it's disposable.
Right.
The pie
pan,
crust.
Right?
Yeah, I use that.
The pie
crust. Right. I got that off the Gazoo.
On a shoestring, right? And then the marigolds, they'd have marigold flowers all over because the smell of marigolds nobody likes. And what was another one? There's one other thing, but those two right there will keep a lot of animals out, and that's a real old-fashioned country.
I'll have to try it.
Starting thing. Yeah, from the Midwest. This is my because it's you're like, and then you get the scarecrow. You don't see many scarecrows anymore, but you'll see more pipans and marigolds. And I do believe there's like some concoction with joy soap in like a jar or something.
They don't like
maybe
soapy
stuff.
Stuff.
But all the smells to keep them away. And I would lure them with, you know, here's your mock food over here. Here's some water, some kibble, and away you go.
Another good hack is like for things like berries, like strawberries is a really good one. Birds will go and attack the strawberries before, they become ripe. And so... Really, the hack is to paint little rocks red with black dots and put them right next to the strawberries, right?
Yeah,
and then the birds will go and peck the hard rock and be like, ooh, this isn't edible, and be done with it for the year. So that's another one. I don't know about okra. I don't know who eats okra, but apparently animals.
Okra's so good.
It ate
good.
All of the tomato plants last year, left all of the basil.
Interesting.
Like it is a row. We're talking about a row of mature tomato plants that ate everything, all down, all the leaves, everything. The sticks are laying, you know, just sitting there pathetically, you know, dying. And yeah.
See, tomatoes are weeds around here. Like I don't understand the struggle that a lot of people have with tomatoes because, you know, we're going on, you know, four generations deep of tomatoes. They're literally weeds in our backyard, right? So
they are.
It doesn't even matter if they get munched, right? Because we've got
well,
so many of them.
Thing, if I catch this thing and you get something in the mail, you're welcome.
Yeah, let them come. That's fine. Like I said, we've got, like, they grow up trellises. So, you know, we even have a tomato plant that is right by our chicken coop that planted itself, all volunteer. And because we usually have cherry tomatoes, but these are bigger guys, planted itself. Mm-hmm. And, we won't even eat it because dogs pee on this plant. That's not the tomatoes that we planted. So they can cut records and come and eat that stuff. We don't care, you know, because we've got, you know, so many of them that it doesn't even matter. We don't even notice if something gets munched. Now, cucumbers are different. We notice every single cucumber that gets munched, right? So
yep.
I guess different problems for different places.
I do put sriracha on my bird seed, and the birds don't have tongues apparently, but the squirrels do. And that's something to witness when the squirrels actually get up into the bird feeder.
Interesting. What do you put? I'm sorry. What did you put on them?
Sriracha. I paint it with sriracha. And, you know, I've watched one squirrel and it took a bite and then it kind of, you could tell this thing's twitching, kind of looking around a lot and then started eating quickly, you know, maybe to change the taste. And then it starts twitching and it fell off.
Oh, man.
Get some. Yeah. But birds don't have tongues.
I think I'm
going to
need to see a video of that. That's pretty amazing. That could be a reel. You could do that as a reel.
Okay. I mean, I have my super soaker here, too, so I'm more likely to open the window and open fire on it. So, you know.
I don't know. See, generally speaking, people that would grow gardens would also feed the squirrels and the birds. And it's like a conflict of karma there. You need to reconcile nature, your love of nature, and your hate towards them.
I just think I have a-hole animals. Like, they're not supposed to eat it all. I don't mind if they eat it or even eat the fruit, but they ate the whole plant.
Maybe not planting enough. Are you planting enough? Buy more things to plant. Enough for them and enough for you.
Right. Look, there's no the whole symbiotic balance. I don't remember anything in kind of biology where, and here's the animal, and it eats the entire plant. Like, that's...
We are not feeding our animals. Here's a quick story. I got the raptors. They're eagles, and the turkey hawks are huge, like 8-foot wingspan, and they're flying in packs right now, carving, and they're coming very low, like almost to my porch. I was like, oh, dear God, and I'm like, what can I give you to eat to make you go away so you're not going to try to, you know, They saw my dogs, and they're like, oh, but they look good. I'm like, no, go away. There's other things. There's squirrels. In fact, go eat a squirrel. But our animals, they're starving to death. I guess our ecosystem is off enough, and people just are not feeding the animals, which is what used to be. There's always an old lady that, you know, throw the bread, and now I'm that old lady. I throw the apple core out the window for the squirrels. They love it. But there's not enough of us out there that I think perhaps once they stumble upon the food, it's kind of like they don't know when their next meal will be. So collectively, we all have to start.
You need some tuppence to feed the birds.
Our early visitors, you know, because they're
That's
not going to go away.
About companion gardening, right? And that might not be the right term, because companion gardening to me really is like, you know, you plant like the three sisters. You do the corn, the beans, and the squash, right? And that's, to me, like companion gardening, but I think there's another term for planting a garden away from yours and letting the animals eat that, and so they leave yours alone. You know, that's this is kind of the same thing as throwing a chicken breast down the hill for the bobcat and hopes that they would leave your chickens alone. You know,
Is this sort of like in Walking Dead where you hitch the leg out of your friend so the zombies eat that guy instead of you?
Exactly.
Stop. I have to get out of the conversation. These going to be our references of these terrible movies that you guys have been watching, the zombie Netflix.
I don't watch that anymore. It's not even a movie.
It was too scary for my rainbow and gumdrop world. I got out of that movie.
You're smarter than that. Be better than The Walking Dead, Zach.
Can we circle back to the
they filmed that here, by the way.
Oh, man.
We could probably do a whole segment on The Walking Dead or, you know, they're here, you know. You don't need to have actual, like,
that level.
I mean, literally, it was set in Georgia. I mean, you know, that's rural Georgia is where that was, outside of Atlanta. You guys didn't pick that up. The cast comes down to the Savannah Film Festival all the time, every year.
Okay, as interesting as this is, I would like to circle back to the Facebook files, right? And it's interesting because we've all, you know, anybody who tells the truth on any kind of social media platform, they're immediately censored. That's why there are alternative platforms, to be honest. But really, when it comes to the Facebook files, I knew that there was some real funny business going on when, and I tested this out. I posted a picture because I was being censored before COVID. I was being censored because I posted about Pedogate, right? And the powers that be don't want us to know about Pedogate either, right? So,
scum.
What? What's that?
Scum.
No, oh, scum.
Damn Viking there. What?
So I did a little test with Epstein, right? And before Epstein was a Netflix, you know, series, and nobody knew about it, we were screaming from the top of our lungs about Epstein, right? So and I knew there was funny business going
That's
on.
That's
so,
Netflix? Good Lord. Wow.
Yeah, they did a series about Epstein. So, okay, so here's the thing. So I posted a picture on Facebook it was just a picture of Epstein, right? And no captions, no words. And it immediately got grayed out for false information. And then so when you go and you check, you know, click on why is this false information, it says that no, Hillary and Bill did not go to Epstein Island 28 times. There was no mention of, no words, just a picture of Hillary Epstein.
But that's so predominant that the AI cannot differentiate between certain things, I'm quite sure. And they probably have just tagged that one thing to that picture of him. And that's part of their bad programming. Or their
well, that's the AI
probably.
Right there, is that they – and they got caught and they flipped it around. And I screenshotted the shit out of it, right, because I knew that it wasn't mm-hmm. going to be, you know, up like that for too long. And they retracted it because they realized their AI error, right? But this is mm-hmm. before the Twitter files and, you know, and the COVID era where, you know, the censorship was pretty much rampant because, mm-hmm. you know, in the interest of health, right? Like, we're quote unquote, we're killing people by misinformation on the internet, right? They had this planned before. Right. They had this plan, you know, years before COVID. Right. They had started this pilot program for AI way before.
When did they come? But, you know, they were the first persons that were connected with Epstein was Clinton. And then it was
Obama.
And
that
was all over the place, though. That was the most prominent go to was Bill
and Prince Andrew. Right.
26. Yeah, Prince Andrews, and then you had Clooney and Obama, but Bill Clinton, you couldn't, it was like, he was 26 times and he was a top dog.
He was a frequent flyer.
In your face. So I think that the Clinton Foundation, which runs the world, probably already, boom, you know, write it out. It could be white.
For sure. That's what I'm saying.
It runs it out, you know?
This was, of course, before all of this madness was going on, these were the people that they were protecting. And when you're talking about social media and the reach that they have or the ability to limit reach that they have, it's really striking that these people were allowed to get, mm-hmm. you know, get away with this. And then now all of a sudden it's just like, no, it's because of COVID. No, this was mm-hmm. happening before COVID.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny. I heard a little thing that Bobby Kennedy was talking about in his view of the deep state. He doesn't believe in the deep state, but he believes in the systemic problem of the big corporations always have somebody in charge that has conflict of interest, which promotes the diabolical deed. And they've been sitting there for like 10 years, you know, and the corruption and the conflict of interest runs true, and that's why these things happen. It's because nobody is being held accountable for who they're hiring. And then, okay, let me think. Netflix and Monsanto and, oh, God, the EPA and I'm trying to think. It boggled my mind as to how many tentacles from one corporation went out, and they're all – there's a puppet master, and it's the CEO of the company that pulls everything, and it's been set up that way, or it's been allowed to grow and become that monster. And that's where a whole new, you know, like the breaking of the monopolies and the, you know, they kind of want to go the in that direction with the equity. Everything should be equity and affirmative action and well done. And but go in and see, okay, where's your money ties? Are you bought and paid for by Big Pharma and Monsanto, and you're working for the FDA? Those are the ties. And
well, and I love
like,
how they.
This is long.
I love how when people caught on to what Monsanto was and what they were doing, it's like poof, it doesn't exist anymore. Now all of a sudden it's just a
right.
Bear, right? Like who, Monsanto who?
And what do you think of Bear? It's the baby aspirin. That's immediately what comes to my mind. So it's a very innocuous. It's like oh Bear.
It's Bear.
It.
Yeah,
it's
how
baby.
Can we?
It's
how can
baby
possibly
aspirin.
Be bad when,
you know?
When they just you know,
seriously.
They're all babies. Just like
and
Johnson
I,
and Johnson
so.
With baby powder.
Yeah, exactly. Baby shampoo.
Monsanto
no
just
tears.
Went to its Nazi roots, that's all, when Bayer bought Monsanto. Monsanto just went home to the Nazis.
We didn't know that, though. We didn't know that they went after the Von Klomp, you know? We had no idea.
Well, you know, part of it is that we live in a corporate culture, and that has to do with corporate citizenship. Belaying all this power
right.
upon the corporate form, and
yep.
and you know this has been growing since the Civil War. It replaced the control of labor that slavery was. So you're looking at these big social forces, and there have been several steps that have grown since then. But one of the things that you're describing isn't so much the CEO. The CEO is an administrator in many ways. He executes things. It's the overlapping of the boards that
right.
one person can
right.
be on 10 different boards of other corporations. And that corporate culture is so, you know, you're talking about they go to the same parties, their kids grow up together. Okay.
Right.
You know, so they don't even, these people, and maybe, you know, at some point there are some big players that are institutional players that seem to call shots like Soros, for example, that control the institutional money flow and investing. So, you know, the nonprofit world is controlled by the corporate world that greenwashes its money through foundations, Ford Foundation,
mm-hmm.
MacArthur Foundation, Tides Foundation, et cetera, all the way on to the right and the left, but primarily the left. The right gets it more from business interests directly.
Mm-hmm.
But the left likes to greenwash it. And I'm talking environmental and civil rights organizations
right.
at the bulk of it. So
mm-hmm.
then you have, you know, so you got levers on society there. And you really, I think in the last couple of years, more and more, it's coming into very sharp focus that there are institutions of bribery and extortion. And you were talking about Epstein Foundation, how these politicians are bribed. For example, they get book deals. They do the nasty for somebody, then they get the book deals. In DOD, in the Defense Department, they get the contract for the defense contractor, then they go back and then they go work, they retire and then they go work for the defense contractor with a, you know, maybe no-show job or some kind of advisement and / lobby job. So the lobbying stuff is public, but then the book deals, no one really knows. Someone writes a book for you and then you get paid $20 million. And the book doesn't sell, okay? So this isn't a commercial enterprise, it's a payoff, it's a bribe. And we're seeing
right.
more of that, and the institutions are also another side of it. People put – other countries put money into the Clinton Foundation, Ukraine, the biggest contributor of it. Clinton Foundation, perhaps, who knows, allows state secrets to go to those people or guarantees certain policies. So it's a pay-for-play institution. Epstein is a bribe and extortion institution going through intelligence agencies. And so the difference between the corporate boardroom and government, and specifically these intelligence agencies, is increasingly blurred. In fact, most intelligence security clearances are not people in the government. They are private. Okay? So in other words, the corporate interest controls intel. And,
right.
and just look, we've had a crisis of intelligence abuse from the Fourth Amendment with the NSA, right? And political organizations. So they can't, if they don't, it's so incestuous, they don't even know, honestly, what is wrong. Like they could, these people don't know, they might have a sense of what might get them in trouble if they talk about things, but all their friends in society support these norms of corruption. They don't even know what normal morality is or legality.
It's called, this is called politics. It's politics. It's who you know. It's you know, your brother-in-law works, gets a job through you, through the city, and then his cousin is the contractor that gets the city job. It's been going like this forever. And it's just, it is the norm, but it's when it gets into the nefarious, diabolically, they have so much money, they don't care any. Actually, it's like they don't even know what they're doing. That's for the little guys. That's for the board members.
I think it's a little more nefarious than that, to be honest. In my opinion, I think it's a little more nefarious than that because, yes, what you're saying is true. You know, that they the people who know the people get the contracts and you know, mm-hmm. especially, like, and that's all the way up and down, you know, this structure that we're talking about. But really, when it comes to the people who don't agree with what's going on, those are the people who get brought to the islands. You know, this is where the Epstein connection is really prevalent, is because, you know, if you don't want to play by their rules, they will make you play by their rules. They will get you on tape, you know, having sex with a child, and they will make sure that that is the way that they own you. You know, and so instead of getting invited to the cocktail parties and the graduations and the bar mitzvahs, and, you know, this is not, you know, anti-Semitic at all, but, like, that's a society thing, mm-hmm. You know, a community thing, they will get you on tape having sex with a child, forcing you, in some cases, a hooker, a child, you know, a mistress, and they will threaten to take you out socially if you don't abide by their rules. They go in friendly at first, but if you don't abide by their rules, then they bring out the big guns, and that's where Epstein comes in.
Yeah, and Epstein, you know, is directly, you know, points in the same direction as the biggest player in American foreign policy since the 1970s, which is the American-Israeli Political Action
yep.
Committee. And that's, I'm not breaking yep. any ice saying that. That's like, you can find that in textbooks, okay? So it's
yeah.
no shocker that political lobby organization, which works with its counterparts in the Israeli government, are saying, hey, the priority of American foreign policy has to spin around another country's interests, not necessarily the United States' interest, and all the way down to making payments to the Israeli government for their military when they have a higher standard of living than ours. I mean, so there's, you know, that's nothing, but the Epstein, you know, you say Epstein, Maxwell, Mossad scandal,
yes.
bribery, extortion. And so that's an intelligence agency of the Israeli government, not
yes.
the Israeli people per se are doing this, but the
yeah,
Israeli government, you know, as rogue of an agency as the CIA is, and perhaps worse, you know, but fully invested in businesses of drones, of intelligence, of spyware, of all these things, these industries. Why are so many of them, you know, going around these, you know, investments in Israel? Why is that a booming investment there? And I think, you know, it's, I told a friend of mine the other day, he mentioned some question about, he said, you know, there's going to be a lot of shocker, you know, to America's going to be really shocked when they see all of Washington involved in these Epstein scandals. And I said, yeah, and Tel Aviv. And he's like, Tel Aviv? And I'm like, do you know who you're talking
uh-huh.
about? You're talking about, this runs through Tel Aviv, through Mossad. So, you know.
It was a joint CIA-Mossad operation, Epstein Island was.
All right, well, you know, and who knows what else? I mean, this is just the stuff that we know. Who knows what else they're doing?
You know, and speaking of stuff we know, Epstein absolutely was a CIA, or I'm sorry, an intelligence asset. You know, he either by force, you know, he got caught doing something and was an informant that way, or a willing participant. I'm leaning more towards willing participant. you know, involved in this operation, these operations. And we're not just talking about politicians. We're also talking about science, education, right? Why did Epstein have an office at Harvard? He had
a foundation. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Why did, you know, Bill Gates still, you know, still associate with him after he was convicted of raping a child?
Right.
Why is this? Well, I think the answer is kind of obvious, unfortunately. What's that, Elizabeth?
Were they college roommates, Gates and Epstein?
No, I don't think so. He had a really close tie with Leslie Wexner.
Mm. Oh, well, there you go. Leslie Wexner, yeah, and Maxwell. So he married, you know, that's Mossad. That's undeniably the American Mossad connection is Wexner and Maxwell.
Yeah, absolutely. And, well, yeah, exactly. And yeah, Maxwell's, you know, father, right, you know, was, I think the prime minister of Israel at the time when Ghislaine Maxwell's father died. He eulogized, what's his name, Robert Maxwell? Robert?
So.
And said that, you know, we can't say how much this man, you know, did for Israel. We can't say it publicly, but it was immense. Now, okay, with that, it's 4:01. It is time for the good news report. So, Mom, are you ready? Or do you guys want to talk, you know, one more round on this subject? It's up to you, Mom. It's your hour.
I'm ready. I'm going to post a link to Seeds of Change. I actually have been posting a bunch of stuff to there, and I might have even already done this. But I do have a bunch of interesting articles this week. But mainly, it's about ivermectin.
Okay.
And about what they did to us. Right up to what we've been talking about what is all this about? Why are they censoring us? Why won't they let us speak? Who's running things? Who gets to decide what is misinformation or disinformation? All the way back to
malinformation.
Malinformation. Yeah, that's right. And so I remember Danielle complaining years and years ago when we were researching Pedogate about her stuff getting taken down. And I remember thinking, oh, for goodness sakes, they wouldn't do something like that. Now, that was back in the day.
I think that was when you still believed 9/11 was how it happened.
Oh, Lord. Yes.
Hey, we were all there, you know? We woke up.
But there have been lots of watershed moments for me, and my history is kind of irrelevant at this point, but when I finally, after many years of addiction, I had my voting rights restored to me. And I remember crying and being, you know, and I was 9/11 happened. I started paying attention to politics, and I'd never done that in my life. I was doing other things, shall we say. And but from that moment, you know, because I've been up till then, I kept telling everybody I was a Democrat, which my entire family's been Democrat for, you know, about three generations. Okay. And then all of a sudden I started looking around and I'm like, and I voted for George Bush. Very first time I ever voted for a Republican because of all the stuff that was going on. I know. Okay. But I did it because I was a patriot. I had decided that I loved my country and that I wanted to be a patriot. I mean, that's how I identified myself, a freedom-loving, okay? And liberty and freedom might mean something different to me than other people, okay, because of my history. So having said all that, it took me a very long time to realize, you know, of course, and I'm also a Christian, and I started to see the demonic influence behind all of this. But there were a couple of really shocking moments in all of it where I was like, how is this possible in the country that has a constitution and that I believe in the constitution and everybody else does too, right? Well, I found out different.
Allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly. And one of those moments was when we started researching Pedogate, when we, during the election, when we realized just, I mean, because I always knew who the Clintons were. Even in my mess, I knew that the Clintons were corrupt. And, yeah, I still voted, you know, back in the day, if I voted, if I wasn't too, like, insane, I would have told you that I supported Bill Clinton, thought Bill Clinton was okay, right? Because I was a Democrat. Anyway, so that was one of those watershed moments when Hillary Clinton decided to run for president. And I was learning so much about who these people were and what kind of evil that was being perpetrated upon the United States. Donald Trump came on the scene. I didn't like him. I wanted Ted Cruz to win the nomination. Well, and I started listening. I started paying attention. And I always said, because I live in Southern California, that the first presidential candidate that started talking about the border and actually doing something about it would have my vote. And there came Donald Trump. I said all that to say, when they started dropping the WikiLeaks stuff, and I realized just how ugly and how satanic this stuff was, that it was a watershed moment for me. And then, of course, you know, Danielle kind of railroaded me through the whole 9/11 stuff, and you know, it just kept on and on and on. And now at this point, she's right. I believe they probably did something to us for whatever reason. So it still comes back to the question, why? Why would people who live in this country want to kill, silence, kill, whatever, the other people in this country, these leaders that we, so-called leaders, why would they do it? And so I always come back to the answer that we are in the end times, and we're not going to get too biblical today, but I absolutely believe that this is a spiritual battle. And I know, you know, millions of believers over the millennia has said that, oh, this is the end times, Jesus is coming back, it's all going to happen, we're getting ready, but Lord knows I'm seeing it. So then Donald Trump gets elected. And you never seen anything like that. And you can tell me all day long, with all of the back and forth and all the politics we've seen over the last 30, 40 years, that you ain't seen nothing like what happened since 2015. Nothing. The relentless witch hunt pursuit of one man, and he continues to say at every rally that he has, they're not coming after me, they're coming after you. I'm just standing in the way. So here we are, we're heading up to 2020, COVID hits, and it was a world-changing event, not just our country, but the entire planet. And I remember thinking, my God, you know, when we started to realize that this is, a, quote unquote, a lab leak, as they say. And telling us that millions and millions and millions of people are going to die unless we hide in our homes, unless we change our entire voting system. Oops. That's when the lights came on for me.
And it should for many of us.
I believe it did, Danielle. And we, you know, you and me and Elizabeth have had this discussion a number of times. Why aren't people? And the answer is they did. They have. We're not going back to the Kardashians. We're not going back to watching, spending our time on dumb stuff anymore. There are millions and millions. And not just here in the United States. Look at France. Look at Germany. Look at Ireland. The entire country is groaning with change. Excuse me, the entire planet. Okay. Having said that, long about, well, I don't know, maybe 6 months into COVID, 5 months into COVID, after everybody, you know, sort of getting their heads out, and made it 4 months, 3 months, 5 months, however much it was, peeking their heads out. But definitely we were watching TV every day because, you know, this was going to kill us. We're all going to die, right? You know, little children getting screamed at in the freaking grocery store about not wearing a mask, and babies in daycares, well, when they finally let the daycares open back up, getting children, baby, toddlers, having forced to wear masks on their face and they're crying. It's awful. Okay. But Trump's biggest deal was, well, let's get the medicine. Let's go to Big Pharma, and Big Pharma's going to help us because they know we need to get this done quickly. I'm not sure if I've forgiven him for that. Why didn't he know?
I think he was listening to some bad people.
Well, of course.
Either that.
No,
so
he's supposed
to
be this. Okay. So he's
I'm
thinking,
sorry,
I need to save. Go ahead.
I really, you know, is it possible, and I'll let you get right back to it, but is it possible that Donald Trump knew, you know, the monster that he was taking on, which is Big Pharma?
Yes.
And had
it's very possible
in some way, you know, and that doesn't make him the enemy, but it doesn't make, you know, but it makes him corruptible. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you're absolutely correct. So if we are MAGA, we will always be MAGA. I'll crawl across broken freaking glass through fire to vote for this man. I will support him for the rest of my life. That's just the way I feel.
Well, but look what happened to that type of a mentality with the 9/11 and the
cognitive dissonance, for sure.
So all right. I get it. I'm saying he's still our best bet. How's that? Having said that, these are a couple of things that I'm angry with him for. So he may have been over a barrel, Danielle, as you say. He may have been getting, you know, okey-doked from Big Pharma. Yes, we can come up with a vaccine for this, blah, 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 whatever. But the censorship of a drug called ivermectin was one of those times when I had that watershed moment, when I said to myself, well, this is a cheap drug that we know works on viruses. Why would they, and I'm talking full court smash press, you will not ever say that word, ivermectin. So I'm going to read to you an article from 2017. It was published in 2017. Over the past decade, the global scientific community What does that tell us now? Just those three words together, the global scientific community.
Might as well say New World Order. Go ahead.
Satan. Okay. The global, but here's where they were actually making some sense. But these kind of articles got censored from global scientific community. The things that didn't go along with the narrative have begun to recognize the unmatched value of an extraordinary drug, ivermectin, that originates from a single microbe unearthed from soil in Japan, which I found interesting. Work on ivermectin has seen its discoverer, Satoshi Omura of Tokyo's prestigious Kitasato Institute, received the 2014 Gardner Global Health Award and the 2015 Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine, which he shared with a collaborating partner in the discovery and the development of the drug, William Campbell of Merck and Company Incorporated. Today, ivermectin is continuing to surprise and excite scientists, offering more and more promise to help improve global public health by treating a diverse range of diseases with its unexpected potential as an antibacterial, antiviral, and anti-cancer, particularly extraordinary. The unique and extraordinary microorganism that produces the avermectins, A-V-E-R-M-E-C-T-I-N-S, from which ivermectin is derived, was discovered by Omura in 1973. It was sent to Merck Laboratories to be run through a specialized screen for anthelmintix? No idea.
I don't know. Micro.
Spell it.
I'm going to put it in the Seeds of Change chat. It's spelled. Hold on. Let me put it in. It's spelled A-N-T-E-T-H-E-L-M-I-N-T-I-C-S.
Anthelmintix.
Ansel, it's got an N in it, Ansel Mintix, in 1974, and the Avermectins were founded and named in 1975. The safer and more effective derivative, Ivermectin, was subsequently commercialized, entering the veterinary, agricultural, and aquaculture markets. Okay, so that's why they called it horse fish tank cleaner. Remember, they kept using those words?
Thank
you, Elizabeth. I actually wrote it down so I could ask that later, but I thought it was an antiparasitic, too.
It is an antiparasitic. Yes.
And that is why, my goodness, every disease we have is a parasitic infection. And then you put a new name upon it.
Of course it is.
And that's why people that take that are ivermectin, they don't have any problems. I got an uncle who's been on it for years. He took it for arthritis, carpal tunnel.
It's an anti-cancer drug. So here's the problem. So here we go.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to read a little bit more about it, and then I want to talk about this. The drug's potential in human health was confirmed a few years later and was registered in 1987 and immediately provided free of charge, interesting, branded as Mectizan, as much needed for as long as needed, with the goal of helping to control onchariosis, phthisis. Also known as river blindness, among poverty-stricken populations throughout the tropics. So, medical diseases soon followed, while commercially available products were introduced for the treatment of other human diseases. Many excellent, eloquent, and comprehensive reviews covering the discovery, advent, development, manufacture, and distribution of ivermectin have been published by those intimately involved with various stages. There are 14 articles peer-reviewed by, quote-unquote, the global science community. This was in 2017, okay? It was published in the Journal of Antibiotics. Today, ivermectin remains a relatively unknown drug, although few, if any, other drugs can rival ivermectin for its beneficial impact on human health and welfare. Ivermectin is a broad-spectrum antiparasitic agent primarily deployed to combat parasitic worms in veterinary and human medicine. This unprecedented compound has mainly been used in human as an oral medication for treating filarial diseases, but is also effective against other worm-related infections and diseases, plus several parasite-induced epidermal parasitic skin diseases, as well as insect infestations. I'm not going to read the whole rest of the study, but the point that I wanted to get at is, again, my question. Why? Why did they unleash it? Because now all of a sudden y'all know that they have all, it's sort of a consensus now that, yep, it did come from the lab leak. They keep saying
that. But I wonder.
Yeah.
I wonder, because you're dealing with parasites. If that worked upon this problem people are having, it was a parasitic infection, which can come from the water, which parasites.
Possible that there was a parasitic protein put on there, you know?
Okay, well, but it also says infections, Elizabeth. It says viruses. So it's one of those drugs that does a whole lot of stuff. Okay.
Real quick. There's no real difference between a body's response to a parasite is an infection.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah,
okay, it's not – when they use the word worms, that's maybe not the right – you know, we're talking some really microscopic stuff.
River blindness is an amoeba.
Sure, because you could have protozoa, amoeba, and other – you could have other – other kinds of things. And so what I'm trying to say is put them all together as something that feeds off of nutrients in your body or the actual cells on your body. And that would include bacteria on sugar, viruses and cancer with sugar.
Yep.
carbohydrate, and funguses as well, and protozoa, amoeba. So they have to live. They're living off of you. And so all of those classes of different microorganisms that cause our body to respond as an infection are parasites. So just take a look. Yeah.
Okay.
And do you know that all the holistic doctors that they silenced and
well,
a lot
of course,
them that killed
we covered that in the first
and a
segment.
Lot killed, but real quick, though, the blanket way of treating everything holistically would be to go on a paracleanse, do a gut cleanse with a paracleanse, and change your diet. And that cures all disease.
Well, I think the whole point is that ivermectin does that.
That unmasks
the entire medical,
but big pharma, fiasco, you need to do this, and respirators.
So that's actually where I'm going next.
So that was why.
Yeah,
And they had to demonize that. There was a demonization.
All right, it's non-power.
When we get back to talking,
I'll jump in. This is a heated topic, but let's continue.
Okay. Yeah, and I definitely love the conversation, but that's where I'm actually going next, is the – how this started back in actually 1918 is something I discovered. Okay, so they made our bodies vulnerable to this stuff starting back in 1918, believe it or not, with our nutrition. So how they set America to be sick and dependent on big pharma. They knew by the end of World War I, due to scientific animal studies, what swapping out animal fat and lard in cooking for seed oils would do to people. They not only did it, they increased the amount of vegetable oil cooked food that every day by an astounding amount. So this was back in 1918, and they did a study, of course, on rats. They gave one rat mostly seed oil, okay, and he was 60% of his normal size. He only survived 555 days on average. A healthy, normal-sized rat living on butter fat lived 1,020 days on average, and his average weight was he was so much healthier. Okay, so they started this back then, and they took away all of the, think about all the foods that they've told you, oh, you can't eat that because it's going to make you sick. Stop eating meat. Stop eating this. Stop eating that. Okay,
but eat sugar.
They knew 200 years ago how much of every essential vitamin, mineral the average human being needs. Yet they have deliberately set the RDA percentage of these nutrients at astronomically low levels, right? If you take only the RDA percentage of vitamins and minerals, you are actually nutrient starved. The RDA percent is calculated just to keep you at minimum health, just enough vitamin C to avoid scurvy. Because of that, prescription drug expenditures in the United States since 1960 went up about 1,000%. So here it is. In 1960, barely anybody spent any money on prescriptions. Now we're up about $350 to $400 a year on prescription in billions of U.S. dollars, okay? $350 to almost $400 billion a year on prescription medications because of all of these strictures. Having assured you that you would be eating an awful diet, chock full of processed foods, heavy in seed oils, and ensuring you spend your life with a body that is essentially nutrient starved, this causes the onset of numerous health issues as the fuels being put into the body contains only about 30% of the nutrients needed for health, while the seed oil sludge clogs everything up, heart attack, stroke, okay? Enter Big Pharma. Then you have to have the medication for all of those clogged up systems that are A, nutrient starved, and B, clogged up. You may have noticed that Big Pharma not only drove the pandemic we just went through, their advertising is literally everywhere. I can't even watch a movie or a sporting event on TV without seeing over a dozen drug commercials. The constant drumbeat of drug advertising generates massive profits for the industry. And who benefits the most? Our media. everybody keeps wondering why these huge, massive media conglomerates with no viewers continue to do the same thing instead of providing the proper information to the people and continue to lie to them, continue to be Democrat shills. Well, why would they do that? I mean, from a business standpoint, because these people are paying them. Millions of Americans through the federal and local health organizations funded by Big Pharma, also they fund local and health organizations, ended up becoming lifelong clients, spending an ever-increasing chunk of their dollars on drugs. So if you've been trapped in an unhealthy lifestyle by having listened to the health and medical authorities under Big Pharma's control, you've been eating all that processed and fast food steeped in the seed oils, and you've only been getting the RDA percentage of vitamins, minerals every day, what should you do? Here's a couple of simple steps that you can take. Eliminate all processed, packaged, fried food from your diet. Cook with butter and animal lard, bacon grease, etc. If you do this, it won't take but a week for you to notice the difference. Eat food the way God grew it, not the way man improved it. I've been eating eggs, organic fruit, organic cashews, almonds, walnuts, red meat from cows with no hormone or GMO improvements. Cut all processed sugar. After about 2 weeks, the sugar cravings go away. I thought this was wonderful advice. Hat tip to Brian Cates on Rise of the New Media. I've been following this guy since I had my very first watershed moment on Twitter all those years ago when I realized what they were doing and who was doing it and why. Well, my perception of why it was happening. You guys could perhaps me on that, but I don't know. Maybe you agree. So when I started reading that information and realizing that we were being lied to, I've continued to become more and more woke, as they say. So Danielle, I posted a link in Seeds of Change that I found scary and interesting, and I'd like to go there next. If you would, please, we'll wait.
I'm pulling it up, but is it the Jim Jordan one? That's the last one in there. Oh, this one here, the YouTube clip?
It is from, okay, well, that was Facebook files. Did I send the wrong clip? Sorry.
I think so.
Something, hold on. I'm sending it now. I apologize. This one is a little scary. Yeah, that's Jim Jordan. What the hell was I? What was I thinking? Go.
Okay, here we go. I think. Okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1.
I've been in government for 25 years. I've never seen anything like this.
First at 11, this one is tough to believe. An investigation tonight into a possible illegal.
How's that volume?
Great.
Okay, all right.
Lab. It was operating out of an abandoned warehouse in Reedley. Inside, mice bioengineered to incubate the COVID-19 virus. The lab was discovered near I and 9th Streets. 30 refrigerators and freezers, some broken, were found filled with bodily fluids. Health officials tell us they are shocked at the biological house of horror. CBS 47's Juanita Adame live in studio with the shocking details tonight.
Well, Brian, this story is so complicated. There are local, state, and federal agencies all involved. Now, what prompted this investigation?
Hold on. This is the one in California, right?
Yes.
Was a simple garden hose that was illegally attached and coming out of the back of a building. It was back in April inside this abandoned warehouse in Reedley that a discovery so shocking was made that it left local health officials stunned.
This is a truly unusual situation. I've been in government for 25 years. I've never seen anything like this.
I never have seen this in my 26-year career with the county of Fresno.
What was supposed to be an empty building used only for storage was home to an unauthorized lab testing facility.
something no one had even conceived of.
We reach out to our local public health directors throughout the state, California, and there's really nobody has really expressed this type of interaction with a unlicensed lab. So it is something new.
The discovery was made after a local code enforcement officer noticed this garden hose poking out a back wall of the building.
Frankly, we knew that shouldn't be there. And when she went to go investigate, she found that there was activity or operation or something happening within that building.
The city then obtained several search warrants to enter the building. Once inside, no staff was located, but
there was a special room that was built housing about 1,000 mice, 1,000 white lab mice.
And the reason the mice were in the lab was jaw-dropping.
Through their statements, that they were doing some testing on laboratory mice there that would help them support developing the COVID test kits that they had on site.
Documents show the lab was also being used to produce pregnancy tests. 200 of the nearly 1,000 mice were already dead. According to court documents, all the rodents were being caged in, quote, inhumane conditions. Also found thousands of vials, many of which contained biohazards, materials including human blood, unidentified tissue, and other unknown substances.
A lot of these are being classified under unknown chemicals. Labels had been removed from bottles, so there was only certain testing we could do to those chemicals.
According to court documents, experts determined that at least 20 potentially infectious, viral, bacterial, and parasitic agents were being stored inadequately, including E. coli, malaria, and even COVID. The city of Reedley immediately called in the CDC, the FBI, the California Department of Public Health, and the Fresno County Department of Public Health.
I think because of that swift action that was taken, we really have been able to maintain public safety this entire time.
Over the course of several weeks, investigators figured out just what they were up against. And as of now,
there are no more biologicals, there are no more mice, but they still will see us abating. There's 30 freezers and fridges, there's medical equipment, there's all sorts of furniture in there. And so they'll still see some activity, nothing hazardous at this point.
Prado said the owners operated under the name Prestige Biotech, and so far they aren't saying much.
Some of our other federal and state partners still have active investigations going, so I really can speak more to the building side of it.
Now, again, Reedley city officials emphasized that the lab had no city approval to operate and was supposed to be vacant. Investigators are working to figure out what to do next. Live here in the studio, Juanita Adames, CBS 47 Eyewitness News.
Sita, what a wild story. And for continuing coverage, of course, stay with Eyewitness News right here on TV and online at yourcentralvalley.com.
Hello, how you doing? This is Steve Favis. And this.
You want to keep going with that?
I'm fine. I'm back. Okay. Somebody was here to buy berries, a plant, and some eggs, for goodness sakes. And I told her but she didn't let me know that she was coming. So I told her, I go, I'm doing a radio. She goes, oh, I'm so sorry. I go, well, you didn't know, honey. Don't worry about it. Anyway, how exciting.
Well, I'm not sure how long this video is, but we're like,
it's fine.
Only...
You played everything.
The news clip, right? That's what you wanted?
Yes, that's what I wanted.
Awesome.
So I do have some articles about it, and I'm going to kind of cover it right now. So it says local authorities, and this was dated July 27th, spent months investigating a warehouse in Fresno, California. Isn't it Fresno County? So it's Reedley, but Fresno County. Isn't it interesting that we're just hearing about this absolute, incredible, awful, horrible just now? And you know what? Have you seen it on the news anywhere? No.
Local news, apparently. That was what we just listened to.
Yeah,
Fresno local news station.
They censored it, of course, from the public, okay? But what they found was terrifying. Okay. Having said that, this is just another example of if it doesn't fit the narrative, we don't care if it kills you. Local and federal authorities spent months investigating a warehouse. So they found this months ago, and we're just now finding out about it. And only because I go on Telegram. What does that tell you about what kind of a fucking world we're living in? That they suspect was home to an illegal, unlicensed laboratory full of lab mice, medical waste, and hazardous materials. The Fresno County Public Health Department has been evaluating and assessing the activities of an unlicensed laboratory in Reedley. The health department's assistant director, Joe Prado, we heard him on the news clip, said in a statement Thursday, all of the biological agents were destroyed by July 7th following a legal abatement process by the agency. So they got rid of all of it, sort of.
Destroyed the evidence, you mean?
Yeah. Yes. The evaluation required coordination and collaboration with multiple federal and state agencies to determine and classify biological and chemical contents on site, in addition to assessing jurisdictional authority under this unique situation. According to court documents, city officials inspected the location at 850 I Street on March 3rd for building violations and found various chemicals being stored. On March 16th, an inspection by county public health officials allegedly turned up medical devices thought to have been developed on site, such as COVID and pregnancy tests. Certain rooms of the warehouse were found to interesting, COVID and pregnancy tests. Certain rooms of the warehouse were found to contain several vessels of liquid and various apparatus, court documents said. Fresno County public health staff also observed blood, tissue, and other bodily fluid samples and serums and thousands of vials of unlabeled fluids and suspected biological material. Hundreds of mice at the warehouse were kept in inhumane conditions, court documents said. The city took possession of the animals in April, euthanizing 773 of them. More than 175 were found dead. So there's pictures of the way they were storing things, and it's crazy. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention tested the substances and detected at least 20 potentially infectious agents, including coronavirus, HIV, hepatitis, and herpes, according to Health and Human Services letter dated June 6th. An investigation found the tenant was Prestige Biotech, a company registered in Nevada and unlicensed for business in California. City officials spoke with, can't pronounce it, Shuiquan Yao, is a Chinese name, who was identified as the company president through emails included in the court documents. Yao told officials that Prestige Biotech moved assets. Prestige Biotech moved assets belonging to a defunct company, Universal Meditech Incorporated. Here we go down the rabbit hole to the Reedley warehouse from Fresno after UMI went under. Prestige Biotech was a creditor to UMI and identified as its successor, according to court documents. Officials were unable to get any California-based address for either company except for the previous Fresno location from which UMI had been evicted. The other addresses provided for identified organized agents were either empty offices or addresses in China that could not be verified.
Well, send this to Rand Paul in hashtag it Fauci Files.
Oh, yeah.
This is not just some weird, we have a woman that was doing like a fairy-like thing from the JFK movie. You know, he was doing his own cancer treatment, the little crazy guy that... the little Italian guy, Joe Pesci, played the crazy guy in the Kennedy, doing the cancer treatment. We had a lady out here doing this with dogs, like a whole house full of dogs and cats doing experiments. And I'm just like, oh, these poor things. But this is organized campsite laboratory with biotech and complete with your Chinese lab assistants. And
they arrested that guy, and a Harvard professor and two Chinese nationals charged in three separate China-related cases. And clandestine, it's at war clandestine, is somebody that I've, another person that I've followed for years, did a thread on it. And he is making the connection between the Harvard professor and the two Chinese lab assistants that were arrested here recently.
Harvard professor, are you talking about the one that stuck the sample in his his sock?
Was that the head of the chemistry department?
Remember that one? Here
and
it is.
Just deported them off?
This was from January of 2020. So, yes, Danielle, that's the same case.
That's the one.
Okay. So, so clandestine says that it's connected, and I believe it. Biological espionage is happening between the U.S. and China in some capacity. So these are the research labs. He's making the connection between a bunch of different companies with a great graphic, and I can post this in Seeds of Change. Okay, so the last thing that I want to talk about is something that I'm kind of excited about. I don't know how many people we have listening, but I'd like to be able to show these kind of graphics when we're doing the show. And along those lines, I'd like to live stream Seeds of Change while we're doing Blog Talk Radio so that we can show stuff like this, pictures. I can put it up so that you can see what I'm talking about. This is a great graphic that he just posted about the connection between those scientists that were arrested in 2020 with the SOC and this lab or whatever it is that was supposedly its storage from a defunct company. But it had, think about all the stuff that they found. They detected, what do we say? Mm-hmm. They said, coronavirus, HIV, hepatitis, and herpes. Okay, mm-hmm. And they had a bunch of coronavirus.
AIDS was there too.
Yeah, HIV. Yes, I said.
Oh, you said that. All right, I missed
okay.
that.
And that's okay. But the main thing that they were storing there were boxes and boxes of what? Coronavirus tests and pregnancy tests, which I find fascinating. Okay,
seriously.
So. I want to start this live stream, and in order for me to do that, I have not used Rumble. I stopped using YouTube when they censored my daughter, right? I haven't been on YouTube in years because of what they did to my kid, okay? Speaking of censorship, they started censoring her years ago, Danielle Teresa.
I got my account taken away for dangerous medical misinformation.
Right. So, because of that, when Rumble started, I started a Rumble account and never went back. Okay, I didn't even remember what my freaking screen name was. But I'm not allowed to, believe this or not, which I didn't know. Again, I never went back to Rumble either. I'm not allowed to live stream unless I have 5 or more followers. I have 3. I would like for all of you to go on Rumble.com.
I already did it.
Danielle did it. My son-in-law did it, and my sister. So I have 3 followers now, all my family members, and I bless the Lord for that. But next week, I'm hoping to live stream the show so that we can, you know, play audio and show video and show pictures along with what we're doing. So you can be logged on to both of them, I think. And I'd like to try
I'm
it.
I'm definitely willing to find out.
Yep. So I'd like to give it a, yep, I think we should. I'd like to give it a try so that we can, you know, when I'm talking about something, there's usually pictures and graphics that would make it, you know, sort of more, it would make it better. So anyway, that's my final thing that I want to talk about today that I shared. Uh-oh, Elizabeth's cutting out a little bit. She's cutting out.
You're better. You were cutting up.
Okay.
Yeah, you
I'm better now?
To be fair.
Oh, okay. So I just said
you're
that's the
now,
final
though.
Thing that I'd like to discuss with you. Do you have any questions about any of the information that I shared today or comments?
Well, I can't, you know, the beginning part, of course. Like, when you were bringing up that in 1913, and of course they did injections and masks and all that around Spanish flu, but there's also, everyone's heard of, back in the day, Wonder Bread. And
yes.
The reason they created Wonder Bread is because it was not food unless you stuck a multivitamin into it. And they had to put salt, iodine, into the salt because of the deterioration of the soil. So the soil nutrients had, through practices, had gotten so bad. This is how the story goes. And then on top of that, you know, we begin starting to use, in around the 40s, pesticides, chemical pesticides, which was another blow to the nutrition of the soil, the integrity. you know, so I think it's interesting that we started around then, and people's nutrition started deteriorating. But the real whammy was the acceleration of seed oils. Like, remember mazola, corn oil, you know, supposedly the Indians, you know, the indigenous people running around. I don't necessarily think they had heart problems eating lots of beta carotene from squash, you know, and the corn was different. But, you know, so they changed the corn and they made it more flour and less seed. So the protein signature on it changed and they made it more carbohydrate. Cornell engineered it to be sweeter than honey. If you have sweet corn that's GMO'd up on, you know, in New York or in Pennsylvania, Ohio, they've really screwed it up. And when you were talking about seed oils, this is really important. This is probably one of the easiest things. You mentioned two things, or we were talking about two things, but the first one is omega-6 from those seed oils. We have to mention that they're by themselves, you know, omega-6 is not bad, but it's what we feed all of the cows and all the animals. So it's in the meat. And so you're getting omega-6 from there, and then you're going to get it in the bread, and there's added to other products in any industrial product in a box, you know, so we're off the charts in the United States eating omega-6, right?
Yes.
And there are some seeds that are very helpful, and in just 1 second, that would balance those out. The I call them the big three friends, you know, flax, hemp, and chia, and they provide wonderful fiber also. And if you're eating a kind of nutrition shake or anything, you can get them in there. You know, you got to grind up the flax, but you can keep them all in your freezer, right? And so just a scoop, you know, and omega-3, normally we get it from fish, right? Fatty fish, from tuna, salmon. Mackerel, like King Oscar mackerel is what I prefer, just because there's a lot wide range of garbage. And this is, you know, in some olive oil, and this is pretty palatable, and you can get it for the day, a couple of those a week, and you're probably changing things. I also take fish oil from sardines from Carlson. Nordic Naturals and Carlson are two I like. I know there's other people that debate it. But the point here is that the seed oils create arachidonic acid, and that causes inflammation, and that causes damage to the epithelial layers. And we have little layers wherever the blood goes. We have little layers, a very thin layer around it that can get scratched up. Okay, so too much calcium, too much iron, too much sugar, all those are scratchy, right? The high density, you know, the small LDL molecules and cholesterol, scratchy. Okay, so basically we blow a hole in the hose. And in order not to bleed out, a cholesterol shows up from the liver, not from our meal, but our liver makes it. And then it's like a patch. And that's the gum. Okay, so blaming the gummy, the sticky, it's not the oil per se. It's the oil is scratchy and causing inflammation, and then you get cholesterol and bad lipids down the road, right? So the cholesterol shows up, vitamin E, vitamin C, collagen. Remember, you know, the whole bone broth, all that stuff is going to start to repair it. And then there's a process of enzymes to unrepair the blood clots, right? And so when you were talking about ivermectin, I'm really curious. This is a very important thing, because I think inadvertently, by shaming ivermectin so much, they put it up front and center. This is a generic drug, by the way, billions and billions. It's one of the – every pharmacist knows it and has given it out. Because if you travel internationally, the State Department says, go take the ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine, right?
For
the whole
malaria,
southern
right?
hemisphere. For what? For travel.
For malaria?
For malaria or travel, parasites, things that live in the water that don't live where we are.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's the State Department, our own government recognizes it. It was on the recommended treatments even for COVID, okay, by the CDC. You just had to scroll down a little bit. They didn't put it first. They put the one that kills everybody with giving you kidney disease. What's it called? Remdesivir.
Right. Yeah.
That was the one that they promoted. And they made funding codes for hospitals to use that. But if you just look down, ivermectin is there. Okay, and so the mechanism of action, here's where I'm getting at, because we brought up that it was anti-cancer. I think that we just inadvertently taught everybody how to kill the common cold and how to and perhaps screw up cancer in the process, because there are some parallel mechanisms for different cancers that operate the way the virus does. If you want to characterize a lot of cancers, because they're a little different depending on where they are situated and what organ, they're kind of a cross between mold and a virus, okay? And in both cases, those feed on sugar. They feed on copper when you build more blood vessels. So if you think, you know, if you're going to come stay somewhere, you want, you know, you're going to go on vacation and you're going to stay in someone else's body, let's suppose, you're a virus, and you're going to want to have contact with other DNA and replicate and be able to have a good time. And you're also going to need a little blood flow, and you're also going to need some sort of fuel source, right? So it was brought up that fasting, for example, and cleansing over 18 hours, I'll just say this, if you're over 40, over 18 hours, which just means, it doesn't mean that you restrict your calories. It means you restrict your calories for a time. And you eat 9 o'clock or 7 o'clock one night, and then the next day maybe you eat 5, all right, or maybe 3. So you're going to want to go 18 hours or more if you're over 40 years of age. And what this is, one of the things that does is it's a reset to the immune system, primarily through cellular renewal, which we would call autophagy, A-U-T-O, autophagy, okay, P-H-A-G-Y. And that's the 2016 Nobel Prize. And it basically means the old junk gets thrown out, the cellular debris gets thrown out, and if you're going to define cancer, it's a busted cell that doesn't know to keep reproducing, to stop reproducing and have a natural death. And green tea inspires it to stop reproducing and just kaput. But there's also the cellular cleansing of getting the garbage out and creating new fresh cells. And that communication happens when you are fasting. Also, growth hormone, surprise, surprise, renewal of the body is at high, high levels. So you're not dying if you do this. And another thing is that you want to do it in a shock formation. So there are proteins inside. It's called shock proteins that signal, for example, when you go into hot, 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 or you do intense exercise called HIIT exercise for 8 minutes or so, maximum, right? And then you break. Or you take a hot shower, then you go a cold shower, right? For 30 seconds, a minute, boom, especially in the midsection, your body's going to respond to that by creating brown fat. No, it's not really, it's more of a tissue that just keeps your organs warm, but it's going to burn fat. And it also says, hey, body needs to wake up, right? Body needs to adapt a little bit. It's a little bit of a shock. You don't want to do this all week, right? If you do it all week, it's your body will just lower its metabolic rate instead of burning fat, okay? And you're also not jacking insulin, so there's no way to store fat during this time. If you're not eating, then you're not sending a carbohydrate signal that you need to make insulin, and insulin opens the you know, basically says, hey, let's open the storage tank and fill it up with energy, with fat. So you can't store fat if you don't have insulin. And eating fat, you mentioned burgers, eggs, eating those have very low insulin response, right? Very low. So back to ivermectin. What really is interesting here is the mechanism of action, according to what I understand, is the mechanism of action is parallel to these other, what we've used as parasite cleanses, is to drive zinc into the cell. And zinc is a metabolizer of copper, and we know cancer needs copper to build blood vessels to feed itself. And so it robs a nutrient away from what it would otherwise need. And zinc apparently is a no-go for viruses to invade a cell, right, to take over a new cell, reprogram it. So zinc screws it up, right? Mom showing up at the party. So anything that drives zinc into the cell, and you get zinc from a lot of seafood usually, which, again, we don't eat. A lot of people don't eat, and it's been polluted. It's pretty anti-cancer, and there's a relationship between zinc and copper. And so ivermectin it may be, my understanding is it's a relationship between the soil and a terpene, which is a micro compound in plants, rich plant called wormwood. Has anyone ever heard of wormwood?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
oh, yeah. It's in the Bible, matter of fact. Yeah.
It's a wonderful plant. So a typical cleanse is that I do every year, parasite cleanse, you know, 4 parts cinnamon, which is a bark, black walnut
right.
hull, again.
But, hey, you guys, can you hang on just 1 second? So I just wanted to let you know that I have to go feed my chickens and I have to go sell plants and I have to go collect eggs. And bless you. Bless you guys. I want you to have a wonderful week. Please do me that favor and sign up for my
Say it. Say the name of it.
Rumble.
Could you say the name of Rumble?
It's Carlo Lomilio.
Okay.
That's a tongue twister. Can you spell it?
K-A-R-L-A, and this is all one word, L-O-M-I-G-L-I-O. So it's Carlo with a K, Lomiglio. So, yeah.
Okay.
And if Zach does, we can go live. So
yes. Yeah, I would love that. And then so
I know
that
I have a Rumble.
Yeah, so that we can add another layer to what we're doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So thank you for all of your help and input today, Zach. I appreciate it. Anyway, have a blessed day.
You too.
Love you.
Good luck.
Take some watermelon pictures. The internet loves it.
Okay, I'll take more watermelon pictures. Love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye.
Speaking of chickens, Vital Farms has pasture raised for $5.65 a dozen at Walmart. So it's coming down.
We were noticing normal egg prices.
Oh,
at the store.
Yeah. My uncle's feed went down from, what was it, $3,000? $700. So something good is happening.
Yeah, our inflation rate going below 2%. You know, it's already pretty much there.
But I wonder if it wasn't an insider thing with the farming department, because the farmers are they're seeing what's happening and they're horrified. So I wonder if they didn't like band together and say, we're not going to let this happen. Perhaps. That was my thought.
I hope.
Well, yeah, exactly. And honestly, that was one of my you know, like money where your mouth is, the things that I've been saying in theory, right? Like I've been saying get chickens for a long time. It hasn't been until very recently that chickens were, you know, a status symbol, you know, it's like, you know, Louis Vuitton, if you can catch a chicken, you know, like that's chicken, you know, that's the, you know, very, so what was it? 6 months when eggs were up, like, it's crazy. And so that was like, Zach was saying shock to the system, right? Like shocks to the system, you know, also there's a, you know, a comparison to be made that, you know, we are the system. So when our bodies are are shocked, change happens.
We learn.
And, yeah, exactly. And so, you know, when you look at chickens and there's somebody who's been saying for, you know, close to a decade that, you know, pedogate is real, that, you know, there's this, you know, control mechanism that most people are slaves, you know, like there's this like cognitive 9/11 fake, you know, get backyard chickens, you know, if you want to eat in the near future, get backyard chickens, be familiar with this. This is the low hanging fruit, like get chickens. And here we go, you know, pedogate is real, check. You know, aliens, check, right? All of these things, the elections are rigged, check. You know, all of these things
did buy up our farmland. And I think people are realizing that's a very scary thing. Came in and bought up all the farmland. And everybody knows about this.
So what are we going to do about it? Like, that's the whole thing. That's the scary stuff that we can keep talking about. We can take the little scraps of lands like the Edwardians did, right? Like we had this is the thing. History doesn't repeat itself, but it sure does seem to rhyme. You know what I mean? You go back to the Edwardian age, right? And you know, there's this, you know, the servants, basically, and the royalty, right? And the royalty owned a whole lot of land, and you know, and the, you know, and so even if you were lucky enough to have, you know, a piece of land attached to a nobleman's house, in order to feed yourself, you would have to find these little scraps of land and put a goat on it and do a little, you know, victory farm, you know, little a garden for yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, doesn't that seem to rhyme where we are right now, is that everything is owned, everything, unless you're a certain kind of person. And you know, and so that really, like, I guess my point is that our wake up path is different. The journey, you know, our wake up journey is different, you know, person to person, you know, but no matter how long it takes you to understand the problem, I'm at this point so well versed in the problem that I would like to talk about the solution. You know, how did we do it? How did our ancestors do it in these situations? And I look at the Edwardians for, you know, inspiration, where they just took the smallest piece of land, they made sure that it was healthy, and they made sure that they fed their communities.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and chickens are so easy right now. I know we're up against a lot of things, but
well, one of the real only thing I think is the local decision making to permit chickens. Like, chickens are allowed in the city of Savannah. And we have a historic district, so clearly those two can coexist. You know, if you don't have a backyard, then people don't do chickens. But there are parts where of the downtown area that then do have backyards, and there's chickens, and you hear them,
right?
You know, and it ain't no big deal. Nothing's falling through, and there's community gardens. So the local control, permaculture is also a political prescription. People who have a set of land and think that they have isolated themselves and are immune from then being able to govern themselves, you know, immune from others telling them what to do in a way that they don't like, in other words, kind of being anti-democratic, doesn't work out for them. You know, the Ithaca Eco Village is just that, unless you have the political will and you actively are engaged in it. So I think that's one of the big things for chickens is a local legislation allowing chickens, and, you know, saying it's no big deal. So code enforcement doesn't zap you if you do it, you know, because that's a big deal, you know, getting or growing food in your front yard. I saw that happen in Syracuse. People grew a lot of tomatoes and stuff in their front yards. And that's, you can imagine what that looks like with sticks and everything. Very small plot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's probably the size of your kitchen or smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Or smaller, and there's a sidewalk on either side of it, you know, going through it, in fact. So they would grow it on the front, the little blop between the sidewalk and the street, and, you know, so you're walking kind of in the tunnel. Yeah, and sometimes the city would come by and mow it all down and give you a fine, you know. There's no reason for that, right? That should be legal. And people are – so, yeah, you know, it's at that level. I'm concerned at about the EPA and USDA. I saw something today where someone was mentioning that the EPA has some sort of reg on the book. And again, how much law creating ability do these agencies have, or should they have? And it's had to do with the ability to kind of an eminent domain like nature to take property that has been contaminated, which is interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I would always think that the burden was always on the property owner. But with these recent spills and chemical spills that seem to, you know, 40 years worth of chemical spills have happened in the last 2 years.
Right.
What in the bedazzles is going on? And they're not small either. So,
Yeah. Well, and honestly, I think that's in reality, that is why, city easements like in California, and I know that this is easy, but I challenge everyone who's listening to this in their areas to find a way to feed their community. Even if the land is contaminated, learn how to grow indoors. learn what kind of pH, like, you know what? And as somebody who's grown some legalized special crops, you know, in California, it's legal to grow marijuana. I had a farm. I grew it indoors and outdoors with a license. It was completely legal. I have to keep saying that, but completely legal to grow this crop. I'm telling you that there is a science behind growing food inside or in other kinds of medium, like, you know, hydroponics, for instance, you know, but how to actually recreate inside what God gives us or nature gives us outside for free. You know, you have to do humidity levels. You have to do pH in the soil, certain nutrients in the soil every, you know, few weeks. You have to, you know, set the lights on, you know, have to keep the temperature between this temperature and this temperature. And you have to make sure that they're off during this time and on during this time. And that flips when you want to make them flower. All of the things that nature does for free to do indoors is quite a learning curve. And so as part of this, right now I'm saying go and plant everywhere, you know, that is the kind of civil disobedience that we need, right, is to grow in every little nook and cranny that we can. And that's a public-private partnership, corporate partnership. Everybody has to come together right now if we're going to do this. But I'm also saying invest some time into learning how to grow indoors and climate control that space so that we're not in this awful place that we know is coming. We all see the writing on the walls. We all see how close this thing is on the horizon if we let it. But if we just turn our backs on it now as a mass in, you know, at more than 3% of the population, if we just do it, there's strength in numbers. I can tell you right now that what you described, Zach, and I'm sorry to hog time, but what you described, Zach, of you know, agencies coming in and just mowing down food, that's a primal thing that if somebody recorded that, you know, people in mass would not allow it. In my neighborhood, in Ocean Beach, California, Point Loma, I walk up and down any street in Southern California. I can walk up and down it, and there is food growing everywhere, illegally in most places. And so growing on the side of the road, it's a strength in numbers thing that we're up against. If everybody just had the nerve and planted an effing tomato bush in their front yard or whatever is easy to grow, we could change this over a weekend. With no political need involved.
And make, you know, the underground, put a fence up. Put a fence around it. Doesn't have to be.
Yeah, but we're really talking about on the side of the road.
But make it.
Well, there's consequences there. Now,
make it a little more hard for them to just come in and take it down. They have to go through a fence. There's elements of trespassing, I think, going on there.
We're talking about city property, really. Like in some places, city property is like, you know, kind of weird.
I would stay off city property. Little
who owns city property,
door,
really?
But you don't,
they do what they want.
Yeah, I've been involved in the civil disobedience side of growing things in public spaces, and I understand that. We did flowers, but you know, we weren't doing food, but also the discussion about having like designing charrettes for around community centers to grow fruit bearing food. And that's plausible if it's designed, but you have to have the ability to decide. And there's another variable here that is very important with food, and that is the toxicity of the soil. You know, first of all, fruit bearing trees can make a mess, you know, so you're going to hear that, but there's the toxicity of soil and whether or not it's appropriate. I think the inside, you know, growing inside, you know, and growing your own food, you can do that anywhere to such a degree. It doesn't take a lot of space and knowledge of that should be shared and et cetera. There's a film that I was mentioning the other day called The Need to Grow, and you can go watch it for $7 now. It was free. And there are a couple of different Like there's, you can find all those links, and I don't know if you want to look, they're in your Facebook here. One of them, which is a seed library in Los Angeles. Okay. So, they have an ecology center, and this is both virtual and physical. Another one was a farmer who was using a vacant lot, and the city, it was the city's lot, but he was able to use it, and it was pavement. And he created these, what he called a sock. And imagine just a 8-inch diameter of dirt that is in long tubes. And one thing that helped his soil so much, he is, you know, first of all, he's a good gardener, and he's learned about soil nutrients and soil life. So this can be transplanted, right? So you don't have to tear up the – it would be ideal, but if you tear up the pavement, there's toxins there. It's a mess. Concrete is everywhere. You know, so – but this is growing on top of it, okay? They're just laying it down. You can pick this up and move it. And one thing he was – had came in contact with was this greenhouse project in Montana. Cold, wintry Montana had built a greenhouse that was operating 12 months out of the year. And in one part of it, it had a fuel creating center, biochar. And biochar is where you create an oxygen, you create a combustion in a low oxygen environment. It's very interesting. Someone who was one of my teachers was very much into this. And the product of it is charred wood that has constructed all these holes. Like it's kind of like a peanut brittle, or think of something with a lot of holes in it, right? And that gives all this space, if you put it into the soil, all this space for micronutrients and microbes to grow. So you think probiotics in your gut, think the same way here. Like when you eat chia seeds and these other things that have fiber, they give a place for the right nutrients to grow. You can eat meat, but you do need some fiber for the right nutrients. Maybe, you know, so putting that in the soil, he mixed it also with some work that he was doing with algae, and the whole thing was fueling itself. Okay. And it was a loop. So the biochar and the fuel that was burning was heating the greenhouse, and then the algae would generate enough gas and other things to create the biochar. So there was no fuel needed except for maybe initial stuff. And somehow it just burned down. No one can figure out how it burned down, but someone burned it down. You know, it's pretty obvious that someone did this.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, these are the kinds of things that are game changers where you could yield a lot of food. Now, you do have to have the social network to be able to distribute this. So one of the person who was doing these sock farms, again, and that's in L.A., was called Allegria. And he was selling premium vegetables to restaurants. Okay? He had a little van, and he'd take it, boom, straight to the restaurant. So this stuff was the leaves were 4 hours, you know, from harvest to table. And people would pay for that. So, you know, this, you know, and you combine that, anything like that, with urban environments. And if you have the right city policy, then what happened eventually is he got kicked off the land, and they were going to build a roller skate thing. The city was going to give a roller skate where there's bigger taxes and stuff. But so you need city, you do need all three. You need this, you need the community involved. It'd be great to have the business mechanism because it's so sustainable. Both of those were businesses in terms of energy generation. Oh, by the way, the greenhouse would power 100 different greenhouses from its leftover energy. So it not only powered its own stuff and made this super fuel for the plants, right, that would grow these 6 feet tall kale, like it would also power about 100 homes or 100 greenhouses, right,
for
free.
This is why I say we live in the dark ages.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know, like there's so much information, just like basic fundamental life information that has been siphoned from us. that it's just infuriating because this stuff is very doable.
There's
so,
no
like
reason
said,
that
I'm...
the municipal government couldn't build these greenhouses. And you could also treat your waste. And this is absolutely Barbara Mikulski of Maryland, who is a senator, Democrat, built a living machine with government money. A living machine is where you take the water from sewage in your neighborhood, what you flush down the toilet, that water, instead of piping it all the way down and running into all the sewage infrastructure, you know, and sometimes it overflows and stuff into the water supply, or into the gets into the aquifers. You just in your neighborhood, you build a greenhouse, and then it is run through that through plants and algae and ultimately fish, and kids can walk through it. It doesn't smell. And on the other end is garden-worthy water, not parasite-ridden cryptosporidium and brat bacteria and all that stuff. And you have to take the metals out and probably pharmaceuticals. But the West Coast got all kinds of pharmaceuticals in their water. But you build this greenhouse. If a government wanted to do this, you could build build one every mile. And you could build one at the school. And there's a water supply. And you could just go from rainwater and school flushing toilets to water. You wouldn't drink it, probably. You'd want to clean it a little more. But the microbes going into the soil is fine. So governments can do this. Right? They can fund this. Corporate companies can do this. Ben and Jerry's had one from their effluent, from their ice cream. Right? So it's doable.
Yeah,
it's a project. That's,
look up Earthships. Like
Earthships?
That's really what it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is
all
that,
permaculture, right?
It is so. Right? You
and
know that.
Zero
waste. Right. Yeah.
In New York, we had one of our own from the environmental movement, Judy Inc, on the New York State Governor's staff. Now, she used to be with New York Public Interest Research Group. That's not where I was, but I was with a coalition. And she was able to come and work with us to develop policies for zero waste, right? Permaculture, zero waste. One thing is that we got funded is the New York State to fund a green chemistry institute. How can we make paints that aren't so polluting? How can we make this, that, plastics that are biodegradable? How can we make all that and give it to industry and give it to business and small business so they don't have to invent it? Here you go. You know, there's no reason why we have to give science to things that then people make and make proprietary and we never benefit from it.
Well, can I ask you a question? Is that last particular program, is it still in existence?
I'd have to check and talk to them. I haven't been up there for a while.
Because when you mentioned Ben and Jerry's, I was like, it seems to me as if there is a dark cloud of black money coming, blood money coming in to squash all these things. We don't want these things anymore. So therefore, if it's not burnt down mysteriously, or you know, Ben and Jerry's has been tarnished with some sort of scandal of some sort. So these things are not operating anymore because it seems like the big box corporations want it to be that they're the only go-to.
Well, so you got to have your political will. You got to fight
things,
for it.
But,
you know, living is
a
living machine.
I really love this conversation.
Squashing this, it makes it more of a grassroots kind of war. It was like, you have to take out your property, guard your chickens, guard your gardens off of my property, come back with a warrant, and then you can mow down my tomato plants. Because it's like you have to fight for the small things. This is mine. You can't take it. Especially if it seems to be motivated by federal money.
What about the rain collection? Wait a minute. What about the rain collection out west?
Well,
I mean, that you got to fight, and you got to be the decision maker on that. You cannot let these people make those decisions.
No.
You know?
No.
The outlawing rain collection? Are you kidding me?
I know. Exactly. But that's everywhere. Everywhere this is happening.
Not here.
My friend just posted a little video that somehow the chickens he had just bought, somehow there's some roosters in there. I'm only supposed to have hens. It's like, honey, unless the rooster Nazis come,
you don't have to buy chickens anymore. You can raise them. But mm-hmm. it's like you've been conditioned to be, I have to follow the rules. And it's like, oh, this is crazy. But, you know, where there's a will, God will make a way. You can have your own chickens. Don't tell on yourself. But, you know it's like, it's I don't know. It's,
you
it's,
see,
it's
in South Carolina,
absurd at the moment.
In South Carolina, those of us from the University of South Carolina, we have always viewed chickens and gamecocks as prestigious.
Mhm. Mhm. And it should be. But now it's become a crime. You can't have roosters because they're a nuisance. And, of course, you can raise.
It was a football reference, what I was saying here.
Oh, was it? Yeah, I don't follow.
A sports reference. Shameless plug for football season.
I got it. I didn't laugh.
Yes, I heard that. Right. Go Gamecocks. What? That's,
you know,
the aggressive pollos aggresivos.
There you go.
And so, but what you were talking about, there was a, Zach, you were talking about a program about bottom paint, right? And correcting, and I'm sure that was a pro for the, you know, government structure that was leading it, right? Are you, can we go
paint?
Back to that?
What's
yeah, about how mean? Removing, you know, certain paints and giving them to,
oh.
Yeah. But
so,
I'm sure you
green
said
chemistry,
paint.
In other words.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you go back to that a little bit more? I'm really
sure.
Curious about that program.
Well, both Christine and I were, Christine Checkingwood, were board members of the Citizens Environmental Coalition in New York. And, you know, if you think the New York's environmental movement, it goes back to Lois Gibbs at Love Canal. And Lois was like, an ally of ours, and she went down to Washington to work on policy. But she was a cookie-making, not knowing how to type, mom, it would be the way she described it herself, and who was forced into being an activist. And so a lot of nurse organizations and other members that we worked with in about 112 groups in New York, we were constantly facing toxic agendas. And we said, well, why don't we go on the offense? Why is the state regulating this and putting so much money into cleanups and Superfund cleanups? For example, Syracuse itself was the second most polluted lake in the world. The first was Onondaga Lake. The first was Chernobyl. So don't get it. It's great that we're right behind radiation meltdowns.
Right, there you go.
And, why aren't we on the offense? And so we were pushing this. We had a conference on zero waste. And Judy Inc. was the staff in the governor's office. Maybe as a nod to maybe some of it, because we would be in Albany. We were taking people down to Albany, local groups that were saying, listen, this is something you guys need to do. Now, we weren't a political organization. We were an activist organization, but we could talk and educate people about things that would help solve the problem. And then we would meet with legislators as well. So there was a limited lobbying in that sense that you're allowed to do. As a nonprofit activist organization, of course, they always try to shut you down and pull your funding and stuff. But,
right.
And we did get that through. It also helped that our director then worked at the state worked for the state environmental department. And the point of that was, the point of it was to create green products. Now, Ithaca, New York, for example, at their farmer's market had, it seemed to be one of the beneficiaries of this, was a plant-based polymer, which means there's more than one. Is a polymer is a specific kind of chemical that is in an orientation. And they were making it from corn, and which grew all over the place there. That's one of the major crops up there. Corn, grapes, cattle, apples, all those grow up there. And I say up there, upstate New York, so the middle in the Finger Lakes area, winemaking region behind California. And there was a farmer's market, and they were using corn that had been sourced locally. So we're talking within 10 miles, someone's corn, leftover corn byproduct or stuff, could be made into plastic that was a commercial product that you could put your food in. So if you bought a burrito at the farmer's market, you could then take that plastic container and put it into hot water, and it would dissolve within about 10, 15 minutes. Similar if you was going into the trash pile, you know, you would want to make sure it got wet, so then it would break down. So, you know, this is taking something that's refuse kind of material from a farm and turning it into a commercial product that then no longer has waste. So this zero waste concept. And, you know, you have to really link composting and what kind of materials and energy generation. So agricultural policy should be linking food generation with energy generation. And the city often generates the most waste, but the farms generate the food. So I know you're talking about urban agriculture, and of course local composting is good for your soil. You know, cut your grass with the bag off and then sometimes bag it and put it into a pile. You know, both are good, or composting in a sense. But this was the relationship between the urban and the country. And Cornell Cooperative Extension would have meetings about this. I know there's a Berkeley, University of California Cooperative Extension that can do soil testing and other things like that. But, you know, it's kind of political. We keep going back to political will. You know, we were able to leverage that in Albany and get it done. And we had a couple things that we got done. And we had a friendly regime. I think Patterson at the time was governor. You know, who knows how Cuomo is nowadays. Things have changed. I have no idea, like, where that has
right.
You know, if they defunded
it. Yeah, that's the thing about these. You can give up the information, you know, to governing bodies, and then they can interpret it however they want. Like, so for instance, like, not quite to that same level, but, you know, my husband is, you know, into the, you know, boating, not boating, but like
maritime.
Management. Yeah, of maritime in San Diego, right? And so as part of that, he was on a committee that basically treated, you know, not to get into the weeds on it, but like, you know, so San Diego Harbor, right? There's, it's a constant flow of water. It's not a pond, right? It's not a lake. It's not like an enclosed body of water. It's constantly moving. But they decided to, you know, as an ends to a means, so goes the theory, is that they were going to create a problem and then, you know, present a solution that, you know, that was the intended solution, right? So they say that there's too much copper in San Diego Bay. And so there's a huge, you know, decade-long, you know, committee basically that is looking into this. And they're like, no, you're like, you can't, like, no other harbor is, you know, under these same parameters. And it's interesting because they were treating it like a lake or a pond. In order to, the end goal was to eliminate half the boats in shelter in Harbor Island, which, you know, which is also, you know, Shelter Island, which is San Diego Yacht Club and Shelter Island, all of these things. They wanted to basically, the end goal was to reduce the boat load, you know, in theory by 50%. But there was enough pushback on it. But like, basically what I'm saying is that a government agency, the Port of San Diego, came in and said, you know, we're going to go by these metrics, and they're shocking. And they took this information that wasn't even really shocking. Right. It was like about the amount of copper that comes out of the tap, you know, and to say that we need to reduce the boat load. It was a means to an end. So it really depends on the people who are in those seats. And right now it's like you
That's
said,
right.
Cuomo, who knows what they're going to do with it? Probably what their donors tell them to.
Well, who decides? Right. So this is politics, is who decides, you know, I've always been
outraged, though.
I've been in negotiations before with some of these multi-million dollar projects and stuff where, you know, we're the public side and bringing normal people into committee meetings. And it just blows your mind that the minute you're in there, they know they're being watched. It's completely different. So the minute you are in their space, in a committee subcommittee meeting where millions of dollars and these decisions, you know, where the sausage gets made, it's completely different, you know, and sometimes they don't even write stuff down. Now all of a sudden they start writing it down. And it's like, you just made this decision. You don't even write it down. What, you know, you don't have a agenda of what you're doing, you know. And it's always always blown me away how unscientific a lot of it is. It's sort of like, so how did you come up with 50% reduction? Is that a scientific number? It just happened to hit, you know, Yahtzee on 50%? Really? Not 48.75? You know, that sounds like a, you know, that sounds like a political decision. You know, that sounds like a top down.
Can I ask you a question?
You know what happened? Let me just tell you, like, let me just circle back to that. Like, there's actually kind of a happy outcome to this because it was kind of like a rogue public-private partnership, if you will. Basically, they found that there's this clam or oyster that or mussel, one of those things that I don't eat, but that you put in the water and it soaks up the copper and it
loves
it.
I was going to ask about that. I was going to say, just go plant more oysters.
Well, it probably was oysters, right? Yeah, so.
Yeah,
but,
that's a great source of copper, right?
And this
right.
is how they... This is how they did it.
It's
they went around to the charter schools. This PMDL committee went around to charter schools in San Diego, got a project together to get high school children to come and help replenish the oysters and see if that made a dramatic reduction in the copper. And it did. The oysters thrived. And I think that the PMDL is now complete. The total daily mass load of copper, right, was way too high, and they got it down to an acceptable point that because of a solution that the port would probably not have agreed to if they didn't go rogue. It's not like they had, you know, permission from the port to go and do this study. They kind of just circumvented the port, I believe it seems like, and went to the charter schools and planted the oysters in San Diego Bay, and the measurements are way less, you know. Kind of a fun end to that, but who knows if people aren't motivated to fight this stuff, right?
Yeah, and it sounds like that would be the first thing an ecologist would say, you know, someone who understands the entire ecosystem, a marine biologist would say, first of all, they would say, bullshit, why is there so much, you know, why is that a problem?
And I believe that, I don't want to say his name, but the person on this committee that was many letters after his name, an ecologist is definitely one of them. Very, very smart individual, and is a member of a yacht club in the basin, and a lawyer, and
all the lawyers and the money.
Well, and doctors,
right, exactly.
And ecologists. He was all in one, and got the you know, leaseholders to come together and put money behind this program. I'm sorry, Elizabeth needs like chomping at the bit.
No worries.
I'm sorry, cut you off.
No worries.
But yeah. And so, but it was one person who was a concerned citizen, a yacht club member. I know people were going to poo poo that, but decided to put his money where his mouth was and change it.
Mm-hmm.
Elizabeth, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, but as I'm listening to that story, my thought, cause here's what my head was, nobody cares about down the line, you know, is this going to affect us? Is copper going to be really bad in the food supply? And, you know, is it going to put, you know, the food, seafood restaurants are going to be a thing of the past? But that's another thing. I'm looking into Love's Canal because I'm like, oh, my God, I remember that.
Well, right.
I'm saying.
Any educated person would have looked at the limits that the Port of San Diego put on this project and said, this is crazy. Why would anybody, any scientist, know that this kind of copper is not a risk to anyone or anything?
Well, and also ecologies have a way of adapting and being natural. Now, I'm not downplaying the pollution load coming from boats, coming from runoff, coming from industrial waste. That is severe and acute,
right,
and needs to be addressed.
I'm not trying to downplay any of this, but like that was part of it. And let me, and not to get into
copper.
The weeds, but now I have to. This was based on the
get into
copper.
The algae.
Yeah, exactly. The copper load of some kind of clam that is severely sensitive to copper, or not, you know, just this one little creature that was. That
I know,
was,
but
you know,
it's part of the
fads,
food
not
chain
killing
and
them, but just the
all
fads over this.
But
and
check this out though. Love's Park,
I'm like, I wanted to ask Zach the difference of the reaction of the government with East Palestine and Love's Park, because that was our Chernobyl. So I'm looking this up, right? In 1953, when they closed it down, they sold it to the Board of Education, the whole area, for $1 to the Board of Education. They built schools on top of this.
In East Palestine? Are you talking about Buffalo?
No, it's Love's Canal.
Oh, yeah,
and
that's
it,
Buffalo.
It's years for this to leak into everybody's...
Such
a disaster.
The feds sold it to the city, and
I'm like, wow. And Jimmy Carter got in and gave these people tons of money, relocated them.
The president got involved. The governor got involved.
It's just like Kerr-McGee in West Chicago. They did Silkwood off of the movie Silkwood.
Erin Brockovich, another activist. We knew her too. People's kids, this was a playground and they were allowed to play there. And the city and the federal government knew that that was inappropriate. And this happens all over the place. There's dumps that they will build a playground and buy off the city, say, hey, we'll build you a playground if you let us extend this dump, or build stuff and bury stuff. And we think that there might be even radiation stuff buried by the feds. Like, what exactly do the feds bury?
There's nothing to be worried about. It's safe. East Palestine is safe.
So one of the kids, the way she got involved was that some of the kids started getting sick. And they were talking, right? So she Lois liked, if you read her bio or you talk to her, she'll tell you, she was didn't know how to type. Liked being married and making cookies for children and being a mom, and she didn't want any of this shit. That was not her. She wasn't a radical, right? But she was radicalized when her kid got sick, and these issues pick activists, because there's nowhere to go. Their kid's sick. The other people's kids are sick. They start asking questions, snowballs, and you keep going. You keep the pressure going, but you've got to get to around the agencies. To who decides. That's why there is a place, I used to hate electoral politics and think it's all corrupt. It is corrupted. But there is a place for then you got to have someone to sit on the throne so that you don't just keep fighting the same battle, because you got to go around the agencies to the who decides, to the politician. And she figured out, was good about getting around the EPA, getting around the state bureaucrats, and starting to cause uncomfortableness from a public relations perspective to people who could lose their job. Bureaucrats don't lose their jobs. The politicians do. So that was vulnerability. You have to go after that weakness. And sometimes replacing them electorally is a good solution too. Carter had his 3 Mile Island.
Terms are good too, because this was criminal. Criminal on so many levels.
Well, that's what we used to call, I was involved.
200 tons of dioxin.
Say again?
200 tons of 200 tons of was buried in the canal.
Yeah, so dioxin is a chlorine-based compound, right? And so we finally stopped making houses siding out of it.
Cancer causing. Mm-hmm.
If it caught fire, it could kill you across the street from the vapors. Right. The fire departments finally didn't, we were working with fire departments. Mm-hmm. People in Louisiana, they had Cancer Alley where they made vinyl, polychlorinated vinyl, and the death rates from the community was outrageous. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and activists alone that's what I'm saying. You got to do double barrel. You got to have activism because they can do things that others can't. And it's good to have businesses because that's usually the product solutions. But then, and they're sustainable. But then you also gotta go after the people who decide. Otherwise, you just get screwed.
Here's the problem for me. You're absolutely right when you say that. Activists. I'm sorry. You had such a good quote, but about how the cause finds the activist, right?
They pick you.
Yeah. My problem is that Pedogate picked me.
Sure.
And so how do you rally your local politicians, elected officials, to fight this.
Yeah, the more systemic, the more difficult. I'm not going to simplify it. But you can change laws. I see this. Hold on.
Sure.
I think that one of the arenas around that issue is in school districts, right? Because there is a normalization effort. I have a friend that's fighting this issue from a different political perspective, but in North Carolina, and the school districts are where it's going. I mean, so parents, you're normalizing the sexualization of children, and you're also bringing in books that say that they're appropriate for 4 years and up, and they're clearly adult material. So parents get involved with boards. I've seen entire school boards get jettisoned and replaced with political activity. I know in Texas this is hot, you know, and you want to talk about basic politics is go screw with someone's children. That's how Lois Gibbs. That's how Lois Gibbs got involved, right?
That's
how we got the American Disabilities Act. We're parents. I knew some parents.
It was bullshit because I have a disability and I got fucking discriminated against left and right just a minute ago. And I honestly think that, and you're right. When parents get outraged enough, that is the thing that will create change. Mm-hmm. School districts, I don't think that. Honestly, and I hate to admit this because I'm still politically active. When I knew that the school districts were pushing things that I did not want my children to be exposed to, you know what I did? I took them out.
Yep.
And I think so many children, that is without a clear path forward. I think that enough people are waking up to the fact that the school districts are pushing this agenda and have been pushing this pedophilia agenda on our children for so long. And that right there, when you talk about the people who are going to wake up first, it's going to be the parents, right? And especially the parents of school-aged children. And I got to witness firsthand San Diego Unified School District and the moms push back. We were one of the first districts in the country to say that children had to have the vaccine, the COVID vaccine, to attend public school.
Yikes.
And we said, fuck no. And we pushed back. Right. I was actually even on the Playing Buck show when I was like, look, my message is very simple. And this is a unified message to the parents in my school district. And remember, I'm not on the board. I said, we will not comply. And that is the complete opposite of being a terrorist. We are not, we are withdrawing consent from this system. We are not being violent. And I think that enough people took their children out of public traditional schools, me included, best thing I ever did for my children. Mm-hmm. And I think that we are right now in this very well-off community. You know, I'm not saying I'm well off, but this community as a whole has actual 1%ers. We chose to not participate. We withdrew consent. And that is the thing about Pedogate, is that when we realize as a whole that our children are in danger, I don't think people are going to vote harder. I think they're going to take their children back from the system, withdraw, get chickens, plant food, do everything that we have to survive outside of the system. And honestly, that's what I'm preparing for. We can fix it
as long as you have that luxury. As long as you have that luxury, there may not be that luxury. There isn't that luxury for a lot of people.
That's
so
true. And
you know,
in Canada, Zach, did you see what's going on in Canada? The Muslim community is up in arms. And they are demanding that they stop pushing this on their kids. So there's no, we're pulling them out. We want this to stop.
Well, and
now.
Right, and the Hasidic Jews did it, and the Amish did it. There are groups out there that have it. And you know what? Honestly, when the Amish got pissed off, I was kind of flustered. I was like, if the Amish are getting behind this, I'm like, fuck yeah, things are changing, right? Mm-hmm. It's a lot for the Amish community to get involved.
Sure. So let me be clear. I have, you know, basically all my adult life been some form of an activist. I didn't choose that, but and I was fairly, no one believes, but I was fairly introverted. I was afraid to raise my hand in a classroom and speak. And somehow I got involved and it just spiraled out of, you know, my mouth won't shut up now. But I don't think that activism competes with electoral politics. I think it's complementary and necessary, that you always need social movements, and you need, as long as we're doing representative government, and I understand its flaws from corporate citizenship on down, you need both. You need to be able to, you know, for democracy, otherwise you're conceding power to other people. But you also,
yes.
and likewise, one's not sufficient, you know. And I also would say the business sector is also very important. It should not be dominating in some form of monopoly of government and therefore rendering social movements non-democratic, you know. In other words, and I fully support and used to train people in non-cooperation, including civil disobedience. So I am very near and dear to my heart that you're, you know, not they used to say that civil disobedience is an American tradition, and may it be that way, you know, continuous. It's keeping our democracy alive in a sense, that this idea. So it's very, very, very important that you did that, this non-cooperation. But again, there might be other things, you know, if you took that step and built upon that and then built those morals and hammered them into laws, the way Richard Grossman, one of my old teachers, used to say, you know, take those morals and hammer them into law, that these guidelines are going to be from now on in the school district, or maybe it needs to be a state thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's a harder lift, but you start with, you've got the most leverage, which is, you know, in your smallest community, and build up.
And in California, I have to say that the voter feels very small. We don't have control over anything, including our children's bodies. And that is definitely at a state level. Those mandates, those laws come down at a state level. Right now, my daughter is missing one booster shot. And they will not let her to even attend 2 days a week at a charter school, even, right?
Yeah.
You know, so we're still
that's
fighting.
Wrong. Yeah.
But that's
yeah.
How it
so
is.
So what is the
she's
parental
a
sovereignty?
She'll probably go to fucking Harvard. Honestly, she's going to graduate when she's 16.
Well, Harvard, they'll booster her up.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah, it's so funny because my
husband
believe is actually
Go to the Harvard of the South, the University of South Carolina Honors College. You don't need to go to Harvard. Go to the Harvard of the South, where I went.
Well, okay, but yeah, my husband by trade is a career counselor, like trained to be it, you know, and he's like, yeah, you can do whatever you want, reach for the stars, go to whatever school. I was like, not if they have to get vaccinated.
As long as you get these injections.
And he gets it too, because he's not vaccinated, you know, but he's like, oh, fighting the training, fighting the program. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
We have conceded too much power. I am not saying and suggesting any of this is easy. If it were easy, in parentheses, honey, they wouldn't call it struggle. that's what we used to say to each other a lot. You know, if it were easy, it wouldn't be called struggle. And power is who decides. So at the end of the story, we have, and it doesn't mean that governments decide everything. I am not like I am not Pollyannish about, you know, how screwed up our government is. And just because you put somebody in there doesn't mean that they're going to be good. You got to check that ass. Excuse me. Sorry, I shouldn't be using that language. But you got to check it if they get out of line, right? And so electing somebody is just the beginning, right? And it's the beginning for them and it's the beginning for you. So and it's only a third of the puzzle. The other puzzle is that we used to say in activism when I was a community organizer in the hood up in Syracuse, we used to say, you know, you really want to talk to us because we're the poodle and we got a really big bag bulldog over there and he gets off the chain.
Ah.
Right. And if you say, and you know what, you should come talk to us. Otherwise we come to your house. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a meeting in the community.
Okay.
Or you come to us or we come to you. And the questions are yes or no. And if it's no, we throw you out of the place. That's what National People's Action used to do, and we used to. So I mean,
I agree.
People can win. You can win on victories. And sometimes you can create laws that way. I've helped to write a neighborhood
sometimes
law.
Sometimes you can. And I'm yeah. certainly not saying that we can't further the cause that way. But honestly, at this point, if we're going to wait to get people into either, you know, local, state, federal office that are going to change this, I don't think that we can. And I think that the kind of, you know, disobedience that needs to happen is somewhat pulling away from the system planting trees on the side of the road, you know, making sure it's safe but make sure that your community can be fed, because honestly, at this point, if there's toxins in the soil, that the chances are that it's in your drinking water that comes through your taps, that it's in the air that you breathe. And honestly, if you're still at the socioeconomic, you know, level where, you know, you can't afford to eat right, you can't afford to eat organically sourced, locally grown stuff, you're sitting there, you know, with fast food as a choice. You know, I'm not saying to ban McDonald's, but, you know, if I can plant a garden in front of McDonald's, you know, and give them a choice, why in the world, besides that it's quote-unquote illegal because corrupt people make these laws, you know, just the same thing. Why didn't I just roll over and vaccinate my children for COVID? Why didn't the majority of San Diego do that? You can say that that's privilege, but I can say that that's the kind of state of mind that I'm trying to change. You know,
sure.
It has nothing to do with privilege.
It's got to do with what's in your tank, right?
Yeah.
And I'll say it like this, you know, part of me is I've done these things, and I'm kind of tired of getting tear gassed.
Well, but
that doesn't mean that
free
20-year-olds, you know, can go shut it all down. It's fine. It's cool. I'll train them. But the point is, it will pick you.
The point that I hope you take away from this is there is a difference between being on the offensive, withdrawing away from their attack, right? Mm. I'm not saying that anybody needs to go head on and save children and come up against the state in any kind of tear gassable way. But I'm telling you, you will get more headlines if you're tear gassed for planting food than going up against an army, right?
Yeah,
that's
they'll
what
just
I'm
cut
saying.
You down. You know, yeah, I mean, so it's what you're saying is there's a crisis and activists have to respond. And absolutely, you know.
I'm saying how can we have a revolution if we can't feed ourselves?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty basic. And there's an alignment of several different forces preventing that, right? So there's no one little thing. That's why kind of why we use the phrase permaculture, because it is non-governmental and social and cultural, and how we eat, where we spend our money, you know, it's economic and governmental, all of those things. So, you know, we always talk in the anti-globalization movement of having a plethora of tactics and people and embracing people as long as we could. You know, if you go – sometimes if you're at a nonviolent demonstration and people start smashing up stuff to incur a police response, we didn't want that. But, you know, so the discussions would happen that way. But people who say, I'm putting my energy into building gardens – is parallel to I'm putting my energy into getting this blockhead who is working at code enforcement or the city councilor that thinks that's okay and stopping the, you know, lawns from getting mowed, the front yards from getting mowed down. You know, those are parallel.
I got to say, I sent seed balls to BLM activist chapters.
Yeah. And what did they say?
They took them. They said, we love
they
it.
Took them. They love it.
But that's the whole thing, is that you take it and you take their energy that they're throwing at you and you completely reverse it. If it's death and hate, you choose love and growth and creation. Sorry, Elizabeth. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, we are looking for a renaissance, not a revolution.
Yes.
Because you shouldn't have to fight.
Interesting.
To get people to wake up to the fact that this is not good for you. You should, you've got to try to bring it to their face and the light comes on. It's like, oh my gosh, this is the way, guys, it's going this way. A renaissance of thought.
That's an excellent point, Elizabeth. Thank you. It's a renaissance. Mm-hmm. It's not a revolution.
That's
well,
right.
Revolution is a change of ideas.
Yeah.
Revolt is a change of people.
Which includes the four horns and tear gas and fighting and screaming and trying to get you on my way of thinking. It shouldn't be that difficult. It should be, here's the knowledge. We're going to present you with...
That's the renaissance part of it. I get you, Zach, but the renaissance part of it is...
Right?
Yeah. We don't have to choose between...
It's a whole new awakening of thoughts and ideas, and it's like, oh my gosh, why didn't we know these things? This is the way to do it. And we all agree. There's no contention. And it's like they have to change because we're singing this song. We're not marching to that little parade anymore.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Which is non-cooperation. That's part of it, too. Yeah, I mean, everyone thinks it's yelling, but persuasion is persuasion. You know, you can do it however you get to that other person.
It's kind of like a non-brainer. Like, what I'm looking at with this thing, what I think is so amazing with the Muslims, the Muslim community, that everybody's been just contentious. They're taking over our country, and they took over Canada and blah, blah. My goodness, and they've been protecting them, and now they're the ones that are really standing up for what's right. We're too afraid. It's not politically correct. You know,
it's very interesting.
Blah, blah, blah. And they are the ones on the battle line who's screaming the loudest and probably going to get this will be solved.
And can I say that those people have been the activists for the longest? And, you know, think about this. You put a cover over your head. What kind of activism does that have to take to walk out in this culture with your head covered? When to their point, actually, Christians too, it says that women are supposed to cover their head when they pray and pray without ceasing. So really, honestly, like, if Christians going against Muslims have always been comical to me. So go ahead, Zach.
Oh, I was just going to mention that I teach quite a few Muslim students, both in Turkey and in Saudi Arabia, and conversations about this with my students, you know, they absolutely wouldn't play very well. I mean, you're talking about a family structure where the grandparents stay with the, not so much in Turkey, but in Saudi Arabia, the grandparents live with the, the family. And there's very, very clear gender roles. And it's changed some, you know, some women are more now, especially with Bin Salman, the new king, they've becoming more professional in the last 20 years. But there's, and they like these roles. I mean, don't get me wrong. Most overwhelmingly feel that this is the way it's primarily the way the whole society is constructed, which is different. So when I'm talking to them, I'm like, you know, there is something different over here in the United States where, you know, they're not even talking about biological sex being a thing anymore, you know, where you can get fired from a job and they're like, what are you talking about? What? You know, I have a student that's up in England and he's like, I can't take it. This is really ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's really bad.
I really think that this influx of new blood into our society via the immigration, legal or illegally, is going to balance out the crazy, because we've been taken hostage by crazy. And they will be the ones to be able to call out the fact that the emperor has no clothes. This is insane. Who are you? Keep your crazy over here. You have your crazy, but keep it over there to yourself. You are not forcing this upon my family. Those are the basics that we got to get back to. Sovereignty.
I think it's an enormous mistake to have pissed off mothers. I mean, it's just, someone miscalculated that one.
Indeed.
I have to agree. That's true.
You know, like, they're not going to stop. They're just pure, you know,
with their activism, if they cannot control the system, they are going to just remove themselves and their children, because that's what we do. We protect our children at all cost, you know, unless you're a victim of the system, which definitely needs to change. So we just hit our 90-second mark. I love this conversation. This is this is amazing. I think we've covered so much ground in how to fix the problem. I think we focus too much on the problem and not enough on the solutions. And all of us, I think, are guilty of that. And I think that the more that we withdraw consent from this system, we see it every day in every shade of what we do as a society, people withdrawing consent from this system. And the more that we do that, the closer we are to winning. So with that, I love you all. Thank you, Zach and Elizabeth, and Mom is gone, but thank you all for being here. I love all of your contributions, and share this video or this audio if you can, this show if you can, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Bye.
Yes, thank you. I love it when you come up. You are amazing light of knowledge.
Absolutely.
I love talking to you guys. I hope you can join us again next week.